is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to Wednesday afternoon at One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Did I scare you there, Donald?
Nah.
Trying to wake you up.
I saw you coming.
How'd you know I was going to yell like that?
Well, you didn't yell. You just kind of slammed your, your hands down.
Welcome to the show.
That what you talking about, or how you yelled to begin the show?
I don't know.
Oh,
right. Just the energy. I'm trying to generate some energy here on the show. The show is on. We're on till 3. Donald and I here to talk about Bills football with you and the NFL. The line's open at 803-0550 and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. What a good lineup we have today, Donald.
We have a very busy show today.
A very busy show. We're going to check in with Chris Brown in a minute. Bills insider from BuffaloBills.com. He is across the way at New Era Field. The Bills are on their way and right about now should be getting started with day 2 of minicamp. The mandatory minicamp is underway, and Chris Brown will check in with him live from New Era Field in just a minute or two and get his thoughts on what it looks like out there today. It is another beautiful day in Orchard Park. Great day for practice out there right now. That's coming up in just a few minutes. At the bottom of this hour, Sage Rosenfels will join us. This is a guy who had a long career in the NFL at quarterback, 12 seasons in the NFL. He writes for thescore.com. He's a football analyst and writer. He locked onto the Buffalo Bills and wrote a piece up on the Score a little bit ago. I think it was yesterday it went up, that says the Bills could end the playoff drought with a little bit better work out of their passing game. Do you believe that? I've always said it with better defense.
Yeah.
But Sage Rosenfels, who has a lot of good things to say about the Bills and their playmakers, says they could end the playoff drought this year if the passing game improves.
I would think what he's saying is there are probably some plays that can be made in the passing game that would turn a couple of losses into wins.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, if you think of it that way, then, yeah, you do have a playoff team. But, quite frankly, you need to get a better defense out on the field. You have to have a better defense. And it's not just to end the playoff drought. We all want to end the playoff drought, but that's not all we want to do. We want to make it to the Super Bowl, and you want to be in the playoffs every year.
Sage Rosenfels will join us to talk about that. He has done a pretty in-depth study on the Buffalo Bills offense and Tyrod Taylor and where the big plays might come from, and he'll join us at 12:30 to talk about that. Good friend of the show, good friend of mine, Bill Polian, coming up live with us at 1 o'clock from ESPN, the Hall of Fame club executive, former Bills GM. Bill Polian has some thoughts on a variety of topics. He was just here in town last week for the Jim Kelly Golf Tournament. We'll talk with him about the Bills, but also a league-wide perspective. Polian has some interesting thoughts on the subject of tanking in the NFL. He said he basically has indicated he thought the Browns may have been in a modified tank mode last year, and he hopes the Jets don't do it. Want to get his thoughts on that. What do you think?
I think the Jets are tanking. I got to really think back to the Browns. I mean, I guess – you know, the Browns did a lot of different things to pick up draft picks for, you know, 2 or 3 years. But for me, I think what the Jets are doing is really tanking. I really got to think back to the Browns, though.
We'll talk with Bill Polian about that. And coming up at 2 o'clock after practice, we hope to get Andre Holmes in studio with us, the Bills wide receiver, singled out for praise from head coach Sean McDermott yesterday for his work in the OTAs. Andre Holmes, wide receiver, I don't think – I've talked to him. Have we talked to him since he was signed?
We talked to him since he was signed. We had him once. He was on the phone in Chicago.
Yeah, right after he signed.
Yeah, right after he signed.
We'll talk with Andre Holmes coming up at 2 o'clock after practice. But right now the Bills are on the field over at New Era Field, on the field for day 2 of the minicamps. And our man Chris Brown, Bills insider, BuffaloBills.com, is standing by with a live update. Chris, and a couple of returning players on the field today. That sounds like some pretty good news there.
Yeah, LeSean McCoy, Kyle Williams back on the practice field. I think we kind of expected Kyle would be back in a day or two at the most. He just had some neck stiffness, which isn't always an easy thing for a defensive lineman, knowing they're down in a three-point stance often, so you jerk your body up, and sometimes that doesn't feel too good on a neck that's stiff. But he's back out here today, and LeSean McCoy was dealing with a stomach virus yesterday, but they obviously got him all full of fluids again. So he's hydrated and ready to practice today.
That's good. And it looks like beautiful weather out there, Chris.
I can't complain. A little cooler today, not as much humidity. So the players will like that, especially the big uglies.
Yesterday seemed breezy, Chris. Is it still breezy down on the field?
Not too much. I mean, there's a slight breeze here and there. It's not as constant maybe as yesterday. And yesterday, quite frankly, it felt like a hairdryer was blowing on you. So I don't know how refreshing that might have been.
Was anyone affected by that, kickers, quarterbacks?
No, not to my knowledge. For a quarterback, I don't think it was that significant. And most of the time during the team segments, they've been headed towards the tunnel end zone, which is away or with the wind at your back for the most part. Most of the team segments went in that direction yesterday. We'll see if that changes today, but the wind really wasn't a big enough factor where I thought it would impact guys throwing the football.
We're talking live with Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. On the field over at New Era Field as day two of the mandatory minicamp is underway. Behind you, Chris, we can see some of the defensive linemen, defensive ends in particular, working behind you. I know you've expressed concern a couple of times, and I wrote about it a little bit over the weekend. Actually, there's some outside linebackers there as well. But you've expressed some concern about the lack of depth at defensive end. Give us your assessment of that, what you've seen out there at minicamp at OTAs, and how do you think this might play out in the next couple of weeks here?
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty interesting. I think, you know, right now the second team defensive ends are Ryan Davis on one side, and Ian Seau rotates in there with him to split some reps now and again. And then Max Vallis, who is a player that's been on the team's practice squad for parts of the last two seasons, certainly has the body type to play there, but just hasn't put it all together to earn a roster spot here. He certainly has a greater opportunity to do that this year because it's not as deep at that position. So I think we won't really know what they have there in terms of depth until the pads go on in camp and we see them in a couple of preseason games. But it is thin and largely unproven, and I think that's the concern. And what makes it a concern for me is the fact that Leslie Frazier's intent as a defensive coordinator, this is his philosophy, he believes in rolling defensive linemen to keep them all fresh. Well, if you're going to roll that second unit in there for 20 to 30 plays, you better have guys that are going to hold up and play well and make plays. And I'm just concerned with the drop-off to a certain extent. Now, what you'll also notice here is Lorenzo Alexander, it gets work with this group as well, and you know, I think he's going to be a jack-of-all-trades type player for this team. Right now, he's playing first-team nickel alongside Preston Brown as a linebacker. But I think in pass rush packages, he's going to absolutely be up on the line of scrimmage. And why wouldn't you do that after a 12.5 sack season last year?
Sure.
Brownie, what about we had a guy on the show, I think last week, Jake Metz. How's he looked out there on the field?
He's running with the third team. You know, I think he's a long shot. Has some arena football experience, as you guys know, after talking to him last week, and is trying to find a niche for himself in the National Football League. Certainly brings a lot of length. He kind of reminds me of Ryan Denny a little bit. Not a sudden player by any stretch, but certainly can keep hands off of him from offensive linemen because his length is that good. There's just not a lot of suddenness from him off the edge, so he probably projects as a left defensive end, a traditional left defensive end, you know, a guy that you want to set the edge for you, help you in the run game, because I don't know that he's going to bring a ton as a pass rusher.
Hey, Chris, what are we to make of Ryan Davis, who was signed a couple of days into free agency by the Bills, experienced, I think, 3 years at Jacksonville, last year at Dallas. What have you seen from him, and how much are they relying on him to be the kind of depth player you're looking for, number 56, Ryan Davis?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are relying on him because they don't have a better option right now, or one has not come to the surface yet. You know, but Ryan Davis, I mean, we'll be honest, you know, he's really only had one really productive season. I believe he had 8 sacks 1 year in his career. And, you know, it's been kind of pedestrian since then. So he's got to come in and really kind of prove himself because, you know, this is a team that's starting from scratch in terms of the coaching staff and how the roster is going to be shaped. So he's got to earn a role here because there are some hungry young players behind him, some of which you've already mentioned, and he's got to make some hay here. And he hasn't flashed to me yet, so I'm still trying to figure him out, quite frankly.
Is he a guy who is a bubble guy to make this team?
Well, I think right now he's a veteran that comes in with experience, and knowing they don't have a lot of that behind the starters, I would say he's probably in a good position. I would probably label it his position to lose as a backup defensive end. But by all means, he's got to earn that thing because, as Coach McDermott said, he's not handing anything to anybody, regardless of experience, past success, or whatever.
Chris Brown joins us from minicamp. He's on the field at New Era Field talking about today. We're talking a little bit about the defense. Let me turn your attention to Will linebacker, weak side linebacker, Chris. Ramon Humber over the last several weeks has been running with the ones. Last time I looked at a workout, I believe yesterday morning, even a walkthrough in the field house, it looked to me like Ramon Humber was still with the ones at Will linebacker. What have you seen there, and where do you think that position is headed?
I still think it's wide open. I don't know that Humber's going to be there at the end. I think they're really waiting to see what some of these young kids can do, you know, namely Milano and Vallejo. Milano's put together a little bit better than Vallejo, so, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Plus, Milano is, you know, a converted safety from his college days. So, you know, that weak side guy who's got to run and cover, those are things Milano can do. I think it depends what track Milano's on. I also think we can't rule out Gerald Hodges. Now, Hodges has, for the most part, been a strong side linebacker in his time here. At least that's where he's been lining up thus far. We're going to get an opportunity to talk to him after practice today, and I'm going to ask him how many positions he's being asked to learn. I asked Coach McDermott that question, and he chose not to answer it. he gave an overall answer on Hodges. And then when I tried to follow up and ask specifically, he still sidestepped that. And I think it's partly because he doesn't want to tip anything off to opponents. And maybe it's also because they're still trying to figure that out. Mm-hmm. So strong side's been where Hodges has been. But in college, he played some weak side linebacker and did pretty well at it. Granted, it's college, not the pros. But whether this coaching staff feels he's a fit for that might be something that we're still waiting on right now. So I don't think I'd count him out of that mix, but we just haven't seen him in that mix yet.
Yeah,
maybe it'll change, you know, once we get to training camp.
I guess my thought was when they signed Hodges, well, there he is. There's your Will linebacker. But every time that McDermott's been asked about him, it's only been a couple of weeks, McDermott's talked about him as you know, backing up at Mike, right? Backing up, working at least with Preston Brown and Reggie Ragland at the Mike linebacker
right.
spot, right?
Yeah, he hasn't been there all that often last week or this week. Mostly strong side. So we'll ask him today, you know, how many positions he's being asked to learn, where he's spending most of his time, and hopefully we can get some concrete answers from him to kind of put the puzzle together a little bit better in terms of what he's being asked to do.
Yeah, get on
now
that.
You talked to get on that. You Murph just brought it up. Preston and Reggie both playing the mic right now. Have either one of those guys moved to the strong side or even to the weak side?
Haven't seen it yet, no. And I think it's due in part to the fact that Reggie has missed so much time, at least in the team setting, you know, where you are calling plays in the huddle and, you know, making your reads, reading your keys, that they just want him to get reacclimated to the Mike linebacker spot before, you know, they worry about him playing another position if they feel Preston's the guy that's going to be the Mike. So I think that's where it's at right now. And even Reggie admitted that, you know, Preston's got a big head start on him because he hasn't missed a rep all spring. So, you know, I think it's a situation where it's a wait and see. And, you know, when we get 1 or 2 weeks into camp, you know, if Preston's showing out, I think that might be the time where you see that shift because Coach McDermott said just yesterday, the best three linebackers will play.
Right.
So it doesn't seem like natural position fit is as important as getting the best talent on the field.
Right. But let me ask you this. Isn't it more likely, Chris and Donald, that if one of those two, Ragland and Preston Brown, is going to move outside and play Will, to me it would be Preston Brown, wouldn't it? What do you think?
I would think it would be Preston Brown.
Well, he played 2 years.
Yeah.
He played 2 years as strong side linebacker at Louisville. So it's not an unfamiliar position to him at all, and he could certainly do that. I think this is a situation, though, where Ragland has to unseat Preston.
Yeah.
That's what we have here. So he's got to out – he doesn't have to perform well. He has to outperform Preston Brown. who's currently occupying the top spot on the depth chart.
And that might not happen until into training camp, right? I mean, they probably are waiting to see.
It may not happen, and maybe he's lost so much time that it can happen. I don't know. That'll be up to the coaches, obviously, as they review practice tape each and every day. I'm not saying that Ragland can't get there. I just think there's a lot of missed time on the field in a brand-new scheme, one he's never played in college.
Right.
Played a 3-4, you know, and so there's a lot for him to learn there. And because of that, you know, you wonder, is there enough time on the clock for Ragland to truly compete for the starting middle linebacker job? And then if not, will he have enough reps at one of the other two spots to get on the field with the starting unit? I mean, I think these are legitimate questions to ask. I mean, and by no means are we indicating that Ragland isn't talented enough to be a starter in the NFL. He absolutely is. But what you're dealing with now is familiarity and trust. The coaches have to be completely comfortable in the fact that the player knows how to react, how to anticipate, how to execute. And if you don't have enough reps in this system to do that, you're not going to be on the field.
I guess that's kind of a downer to me, Chris, because a lot of us were hoping that Reggie Ragland would be a boost, a jolt to the defense, hopefully sooner rather than later. You're just telling me to pump the brakes a little bit.
I'm not saying it can't happen.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it can't happen. He's a smart player. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to debate that. I mean, when he was coming out in the draft, he was called one of the most instinctive players in the draft class, let alone defensive players. So I certainly think it can happen. But what kind of track is he going to be on? I mean, this is a bigger learning curve than he's accustomed to in his football career.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge for him. Not to mention the fact that, oh, by the way, he's coming off an ACL injury. Now, he is healthy, and he's got full strength in the leg, but you hear sometimes about how players don't fully recover until the following year. So that's another thing to be mindful of, too. We've got to keep an eye on that, make sure he's in practice each and every day. There's no days off, so he's getting all those reps that he probably needs to truly compete for that role.
All right, well, as they get into teamwork, Chris, it looks like the headline, the takeaway from the start of today's session is that McCoy is back and Kyle Williams is back, huh?
Yeah, that's the headline so far. We'll see if there are any others that develop once the team periods get underway. I got to say, Tre'Davious White was outstanding yesterday. Probably the best defensive player on the field. Two pass breakups and an interception. He's just been around the ball constantly and very encouraging. I'd be very surprised if he doesn't lock down the starting right cornerback role sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Okay. Chris Brown, thank you. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, reporting from on the field, New Era Field, as the Bills get through day two or begin day two of their mandatory mini camp. Just when I thought Chris was going to bring us all down, he throws in that nugget about Tre'Davious White.
Yeah. So. I mean, when we talk about the linebacker position, Reggie, this is a big learning curve because, he hasn't – first of all, he came in last year. He didn't play. Now he has a new scheme, new staff, everything. He has to learn this scheme. He's a smart player, but at the same time he has to learn the scheme, he has to get used to actually playing football again on that leg. And we all know that's a mental curve in itself, you know. So we have to see how he looks. Really, when you get there are certain positions in football that I believe you can't really tell until you get to camp, you know, until you get to where these guys have pads on and they're able to hit, come downhill. Everything looks good right now. Everybody's running around and, you know, you just, that's your fit. Just be in the hole you're supposed to be in. But we want to see you once you get the pads on actually chase down guys and make tackles and things like that. And that's where you'll see if he's able to dethrone Preston Brown from that middle linebacker spot. And if so, I would think Preston will move to the strong side.
You guys, you and Chris are being too cautious with Reggie. They need him, man. They need him. If they're going to get better on defense, he is one of the keys for me. We've talked about that on the show, you know, and I'm not trying to be fanboy here, but they need him to be ready to play as soon as he's ready. I'm not saying push him or jeopardize a re-injury or anything, but if they're going to get better on defense, he is one of the top guys, I think, to accomplish that. And if you and Chris are telling me that you're not sure if he'll be ready or if he's got a system to learn or whatever, then I worry about that. I do.
I mean, you're not sure if he's going to be ready just because that's a serious ACL injury. And so you just don't know what to expect once he gets out there and really has to chase these guys down. What are you going to look like when you really have to plant on that leg, cut, and do everything, and at the same time you have to learn the defense? I don't think it's going to be an issue of learning the defense, though it's a big learning curve.
He's a good player. He's a really good player.
I just think the injury itself and the mental side of it, where will he be once we get to training camp every day where he has to hit guys every day? And guys, you know, linemen are coming out and they're leaning on him and different things. How is that leg reacting? That's what we have to wait and see.
Talking about the linebackers today with Chris Brown, who was over there at the start of today's day two of the mini camp. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550, the number to call if you'd like to weigh in. Maybe you want to weigh in on our Twitter poll. What do you think? And this comes about. Sage Rosenfels is going to join us at 12:30, just a couple of minutes from now, about 10 minutes from now, has written a post for thescore.com. The Bills need an improved passing game to end the playoff drought. Our question to you via Twitter today, who will be the biggest Bills offensive playmaker in 2017? Who do you think it'll be? Can they get that kind of improvement out of the passing game that that Sage Rosenfels says they need to get? Who will be the Bills' biggest offensive playmaker this year? That's our Twitter poll. We offer you a couple of options on Twitter, or you can throw your own name in there. Sammy Watkins, maybe a healthy Sammy Watkins, becomes a big playmaker for the Bills. LeSean McCoy, we put that up there. Tyrod Taylor, the trigger man, the quarterback of it all, or is there someone else? Right now, 70% of you say LeSean McCoy will be the biggest offensive playmaker. 13% say the quarterback Taylor. 12% say Sammy Watkins, 5% say somebody else. You know, the reason this came up, Donald, is because Sage Rosenfels, joining us in a couple of minutes, talked about explosive plays, big plays. And that's kind of what we're looking at here, not the, you know, where the offense will be focused on or who will have the most yards, but who will be the playmaker? Who will be the guy getting into the end zone, making big plays? McCoy did it last year. He's likely to do it again, but a healthy Sammy, I think, merits some consideration here. I think Zay Jones is an interesting guy to watch in terms of getting in the end zone, contributing big pass plays, 20 yards or more. Give us your thoughts on that. Lines are open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550, or via Twitter. Who do you think will be the biggest offensive playmaker for the Bills? A couple of tweets on this. Nate tweets in, Sammy, if his foot injury is behind him, he will be unstoppable, especially with the in a contract year. Bob Timchak tweets in, Shady's closing in on 10,000 yards, still going running strong. With a better quarterback, it would probably be Sammy, but Tyrod is who he is, sometimes struggles. Chris Pearson tweets in, McCoy will be ranked as the number one running back for total yards, and Sammy will only help the running game more. And finally, a tweet from Daniel T. who says, silly question. Send in your own question.
Yeah. I mean, what?
You got a better question? Let's hear it.
Silly question.
Silly.
So what's
silly
the answer?
Rabbit.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, right.
What is your answer? I think, you know, in this run-first offense, Shady will be the biggest playmaker as long as that offensive line is good. And as long as, you know, this is why football is the ultimate team sport, right? Because you need, as a running back, you need for so many different things to go right. Now, Shady, we know, can make guys miss. But if his offensive line is not intact and healthy and blocking how they usually do, he won't be the same Shady. And that goes for Tyrod Taylor. You know, if his receivers are not in the right place, if the running backs don't pick up, everything is predicated on somebody else doing something. I do think, though, that Shady will have, you know, he'd be the biggest playmaker because this is a run-first offense. I would hope, though, that Tyrod Taylor would be the biggest playmaker, and that is running and, you know, throwing the ball.
Maybe a way to think of it is who will be the big playmaker, who will make the big plays in this offense.
Yeah.
Is it still Shady? I guess. Believe me, a lot of big run plays for the Bills. I think they were among, if not the number one team for explosive run plays last year. But maybe things change a little bit this year. Maybe they have to change, according to Sage Rosenfels. They have to be more explosive in the passing game. They're down near the bottom of the league in the passing game. Who will be the big playmaker? Not the, you know, overall yardage or the, you know, the most important element of the offense, but the big playmaker. Take a few calls here, not entirely on topic, but let's work him in here. Brad in Rochester. Brad, what do you think?
Hey, guys. With the addition of Peter Mim and P.J. Yates, what are the odds Cardale Jones sticks and makes the roster this year?
Do you need a number, Brad?
I'd say this. It's going to be tough for Cardale Jones to make this roster. He's really going to have to prove that he's better than both those guys. You bring in a guy like T.J. Yates for a reason. You bring him in because he's a veteran. He's won games in this league. And if your starter goes down, you need that veteran to go in there and make plays for you. When you draft a quarterback, no matter what round you draft that quarterback in, coaches typically want to allow that guy to develop, you know, and they have no ties to Cardale Jones. So, you know, I don't know what odds are, but I'd say it'd be tough for Cardale Jones to make this roster.
If I had to put a percentage on it, I would say 30 to 40%. Cardale Jones has a chance to make the roster because of all the reasons Donald talked about, but it's you know, we got a ways to go here. Mm-hmm. You know, you never know.
We definitely got a ways to go. And Cardale Jones, if he doesn't make this roster, he'll be in the league.
He'll be on somebody's
They
roster.
Definitely will not be able to bring him back. I doubt they would be able to bring him back on the practice squad, though, just here, because of his raw talent, size, and everything.
Here's Greg in his car. Hello, Greg. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, good to be on the air. I got a question, and this might be a good show for it because you've got Sage coming on and Bill Polian. I've been thinking about this for a month and calling in. You know, with the rule changes in the NFL in the last 10 years and the emphasis on quarterbacking a certain way versus the development system for NFL quarterbacks, which is the college game, which is really different, are we just not seeing quarterbacks developed at all that can come in and play in the NFL? And is this going to be a problem down the year as you have 32 teams and 16 of them have decent quarterbacks, and then it seems like 10 of them have decent quarterbacks now, and you just can't find another one?
I think it's truly an issue moving forward just because of how college offenses are. I think that they're not really they're not getting these guys ready for NFL type of offenses.
Right. Now, which is not their job, by the way.
It's not their job. Their job is to win games, you know. And so in this day and age, I think it's going to be a problem moving forward, and it's going to take more time for these quarterbacks to – and that's not every guy. You know, you're going to have your anomalies, but for the most part, I think it's going to take more time for these quarterbacks to get ready in this league.
Yeah, and they're not developing a lot of them, and they're not developing the kind of traditional quarterbacks that we had, say, 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, no. I mean, there's a lot more – pocket passers.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot more like scrambling type of mobile quarterbacks coming out of college now just because it works in college. When you have a guy who can move around and throw the ball and get out of the pocket, it really does help you win games in college. And those are the guys that are coming into this league. In this league, it can help you make plays, but it doesn't necessarily turn into Super Bowl wins.
I would submit the Bills may be, you know, they may have found the type of quarterback that will excel in the future, the type of quarterback. Whether Tyrod does it or not, we'll see. But a guy who can be a pocket passer and a guy who has tremendous mobility and a guy who can move around outside the pocket and still make throws downfield.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Tyrod Taylor is the perfect quarterback, but he possesses those traits. And if you want him to sit in the pocket and do his thing, obviously in Tyrod's case, you wish he were taller, you wish he was – pull the trigger a little quicker, make quicker decisions. That's all in a process of development. But he might be the type of quarterback that excels in the NFL.
We've seen him make throws from the pocket. You know, it's just with Tyrod, you got to see him do it and be more consistent at it. You know, you need to see him do more things as well in terms of being on time and throwing guys open, seeing open receivers. We all know quarterbacks miss receivers, but he misses a lot. It seems like a lot more than other guys. And so, for me, we've seen him do it in flashes. We need to see him be consistent with it and trust his arm. You know, we know you can run. We know you trust your feet, but trust your arm, trust your brain, trust your eyes as a quarterback. You have to trust your eyes and your arm and make the throws.
We're going to talk about Tyrod, going to talk about Sammy, going to talk about Shady, we're going to talk about Zay Jones with our next guest coming up. Sage Rosenfels, who played a dozen years in the NFL at quarterback, says the Bills have the tools anyway to have an outstanding offense. They need an improved passing game to end the playoff drought, according to Sage Rosenfels. He writes for thescore.com. He will join us coming up next on the show, so come on back for that. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio in Orchard Park while the Buffalo Bills are in day two of their mandatory minicamp out on the field at New Era Field. As you heard Chris Brown earlier, LeSean McCoy back at practice today after missing yesterday with an illness. Kyle Williams back at practice today after neck stiffness yesterday. Let's turn our attention to the Buffalo offense, however. Joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a man who spent 12 seasons in the NFL playing quarterback with the Dolphins, the Texans, and the Giants. Right now, he's a football analyst and writer for thescore.com. He is the host of the Locked On Vikings podcast. Happy to have former NFL quarterback Sage Rosenfels on the line with us. Sage, thanks for coming on. John Murphy and Donald Jones, thanks for being with us here this afternoon. We appreciate it.
Good afternoon, guys, and thanks for having me on today.
You wrote a post for thescore.com that obviously got our attention when you wrote about the Bills who need an improved passing game to end their playoff drought. You write the Bills have to improve their passing game to end the playoff drought. That's the easy part, Sage, right? I mean, what? How do they get better in the passing game? What do you see?
Well, when I analyze the situation of the Buffalo Bills and why they haven't had success the last couple of years, and, you know, what if things go right, what could put them over the top to, you know, again, be a playoff team this year? And I don't think they're going to be, you know, beat the Patriots. Shoot, I was in that division for 4 years with the Miami Dolphins, and, you know, it's been the Patriots division for a long time. But I do feel like they've got the right pieces in place, not just from an offensive player standpoint, but from a coaching standpoint, that could bring them to the next level. And I really like Tyrod Taylor. The more I've watched him on film, the more I've sort of studied him in his interviews, the more I think he's a very good NFL quarterback. Does a lot of good things. He's very dangerous. You know, he's a part of that running game that Buffalo has that was hands down the best of the league last year, better than Dallas Cowboys as far as big plays, and that's a big deal in the NFL. Their passing game, obviously, does not have those big plays. It's one of the worst in the league. So, you know, how do they change that up? And I think they hired the right guy in Rick Dennison, who comes from that Kyle Shanahan, Gary Kubiak, Mike Shanahan tree, who are great at running the football with their zone running scheme, the different running schemes, but also the play action. And I think that's somewhere where that Buffalo was missing last year, that Rick Dennison could come in and really make a big difference and could help out Tyrod Taylor and this offense become a legitimate passing threat in the NFL.
So just for the purposes of definition, when you talk about big plays, you're referring to like explosive plays, right? And the Bills were among the league best last year in explosive big plays in the run game. What's that, 10 yards or more, and near the bottom of the league and in the big plays generated through the air, right?
Yes, they were. They had, I believe, 77 run plays that were, I think it's over either 15 or 20 yards, maybe 20 yards is a concern explosive. But they had 77. The Dallas Cowboys had 72. You know, at the other end, the Minnesota Vikings were last in the league with combined passing and running 51 explosive plays. Buffalo Bills had 100. So they make big plays, but they're making them on the ground, and that's not a bad thing. You want to make those big plays on the ground, and Tyrod Taylor is definitely a part of that. Obviously, Shady McCoy is a fantastic running back. I have no idea what Philly was doing getting rid of him. He is a fantastic running back. The question is the play action, and that's where you know, everyone's favorite person to talk about in Buffalo, I'm sure, is Sammy Watkins. You know, he's such a talented receiver. There's a lot given up for him. He hasn't quite lived up to that potential yet. There's been some injuries. And what I describe is in that type of offense, in that Rick Dennison offense, there has to be a go-to wide receiver. There has to be somebody that can get down the field, you know, beat secondaries, be a threat. Sammy Watkins has the talent to be that. The last couple of guys who have been this style of offense who have had huge success, Andre Johnson in Houston or Kyle Shanahan Kubiak, and also Julio Jones, obviously, with Atlanta the last couple of years when Shanahan went there as the offensive coordinator. So, you know, Rick Dennison, this is the offense that he has been in for basically his entire NFL career. And if Sammy Watkins can become that guy, if he can stay healthy and become that guy, this offense could be really explosive.
Now, Sage, you talked about Tyrod and this passing game last year being all the way down at the bottom of the league. When you studied him on film, I know you liked a lot of the things that he can do, but what are some of the flaws that you see in his game as well?
Well, he has some accuracy issues occasionally. He sometimes tries to run out of the pocket a little bit too quickly, but for the most part, you know, I see him do a lot of the same things as Russell Wilson. I think he throws the ball down the field pretty well. I think the style of offense that he was in, it didn't really fit his passing game before, to be honest with you. I think this offense might be much better. He's a very mobile quarterback. He can throw on the run well. You know, Jake Plummer threw for over 4,000 yards in this offense, and he basically ran bootlegs the entire time. He was an athletic quarterback as well. Tyrod can do that. He can throw on the run well. He can throw from the pocket well. And here's another thing. Is in that sort of Gary Kubiak, Rick Dennison offense, it's a lot of three-step passing game, a lot of quick bubbles, get the ball out. And what does Sammy Watkins did really, really well at Clemson, taking a bubble route and getting it for 10 or 12 or 15 yards. He was really good with the ball in his hands after the catch. And so, as I said, I think Rick Dennison, if this offense comes together, I think Rick Dennison's the perfect coordinator that could get the most out of both Tyrod Taylor, Shady McCoy, and the wide receiver Sammy Watkins.
We're on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with Sage Rosenfels, former NFL quarterback. He writes for thescore.com, football analyst writer. He says the Bills need an improved passing game to get into the playoffs finally. When you talk about the play-action concepts that Rick Dennison would bring here, can you kind of break it down for us a little bit, Sage, and how that leads to bigger passing play, you know, more explosive plays in the passing game, those play-action concepts you referred to?
Well, yeah. So, you know, in the zone running scheme, obviously there's no pulling players. Everyone's sort of zoning it off. So the nice thing about that is when you call a play-action, as in you're faking the run and you're going to pass, the line is sort of built a wall in the running game. You know, the action coming at the defense looks like run. The details that they have with both, you know, the running back, the quarterback, the line, everything is so detailed that it sucks up those linebackers. I mean, when I was under center with the Houston Texans and I was about to fake to my right to the running back, I just knew that will linebacker, that will Mike linebacker, the safety, whoever is over sort of in that area, as long as they sucked up just a yard or two, I could pop it right over to their heads. You know, to Andre Johnson or Kevin Walter or Owen Daniels down the field. That not all the teams run a lot of, you know, play action type stuff. The bootleg game for years, for almost two decades now, it's been taught the best and executed the best by this style of offense. And Rick Dennison's that coordinator. So I think, you know, the play action is this mix of runs and passes that look just like the runs that can suck up those safeties, suck up those linebackers. And there's big, you know, gaping holes just over the heads of linebackers, you know, 15, 20, 25 yards down the field.
Hey, Sage, in this type of offense, we know in every offense there's usually one or two positions that thrive, you know, and that might be an outside receiver at the X, slot receiver, tight ends, running backs, whomever. Is there one position in this offense that we should expect to thrive this season?
Well, if everything goes to plan, I mean, this is the type of offense that, you know, for really, as I said, for 15 years or so, you know, they took running backs that were nobodies. You know, Arian Foster was basically a nobody, and Mike Anderson and these guys in Denver weren't all great players, but then they get in this offense and they run for 1,000 or 1,200 yards. So Shady McCoy with that type of scheme could be really dangerous, and so he could have, I think, an exceptional year. And then there's usually a wide receiver. And that's the thing also. So the play action is good, but they do such a good job in this scheme of moving. That it's not the X receiver who's just standing out there by the numbers, the receiver standing out there by the numbers. They move these guys around a lot. Andre Johnson, Julio Jones caught a ton of balls when they're standing right next to the right tackle or left tackle inside. You know, they can get matchups versus zone coverage on Mike linebackers, on Will linebackers. I mean, you'd love to have Sammy Watkins lined up, you know, on an inside linebacker any time of the day, right? So usually one receiver really thrives. The running back can thrive if they run the zone well, and Shady McCoy does extremely well. It really comes down to that offensive line and the detail of the offensive line, and if they really can, you know, buy in and understand what they're trying to teach in that zone running scheme.
Sage, you kind of encapsulated that in your post about the Bills offense when you said this type of offense knows how to get the football to its best playmakers, and Watkins has to be that player for Buffalo. You've kind of put the onus right on Sammy Watkins to be that guy.
I have, and I'm not trying to knock the other guys, but as far as I can tell, Sammy Watkins is the guy that has superstar potential on that team, and y'all know what potential is. It means you just haven't done it yet. So he does have potential, and his numbers aren't that much different than, say, Julio Jones, you know, first three seasons. So obviously he has to stay healthy. But I think if he stays healthy, and this is one of my big concerns also with Sammy, is I do see these quotes that, you know, Sammy's really buying in this year and Sammy really seems to be on this year. I tell you what, Andre Johnson, you would never hear a quarterback say that about him because he was always on it from the day he walked into the league. Same with Julio Jones. There was never a question of, you know, how much were they paying attention, how much were they putting into the game. If Sammy Watkins buys into the game and stays healthy and learns from this coaching staff, he could be a superstar in this league.
Last question for you, Sage. It is a new offense. How much of a break-in period do you think it'll take for the Bills to maybe reach the heights that you say they are capable of with this offensive attack with the playmakers they have?
Well, yeah, luckily you have obviously all the OTAs and all that type of stuff in the summertime and training camp, but there is a definite difference between year one and year two of this offense. You saw it with the Kyle Shanahan, Matt Ryan connection the last couple of years. First year, he had a solid year. Threw too many interceptions, but threw for a lot of yards. Guys are making plays. The second year, it all came together. So I think it'll be improvement in year one. It does take a little time for Evan to really understand all the aspects of the zone running scheme, the defense that it goes against, and where the hole really should be. So a lot of times it's that second year when guys that have really bought in are on the team and everyone really knows where the bones are buried in the offense.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it works out, Sage. It's a great perspective on the Bills, where they are in this offseason, headed into the year. We thank you very much for joining us to talk about it today.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Sage Rosenfels, former NFL quarterback, 12 seasons in the league with the Dolphins, the Texans, and the Giants. He is a football analyst and writer for thescore.com. He wrote just the other day, the Bills need improved passing game to end the playoff drought. We're going to talk about some of his points when we return, Donald and I, plus some more to show you when we come back after the break. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. We just got off the line with Sage Rosenfels, former NFL quarterback. Wrote a post for on the internet about the Bills' offensive playmakers. Sage joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh, for thescore.com. He said one thing, Donald, and this goes to our Twitter poll, too, about who's going to be the big playmaker. And I guess what more I was thinking of was who's going to make the big plays, not the most important guy on offense. Sean Seracki kind of gets it. He says, LaShawn is an easy answer, but I do think Sammy's going to have that breakout season we've been waiting for. Rosenfels essentially put the onus in his post on Sammy Watkins, saying if they're going to have the breakout offensive numbers, they might need to make the playoffs, then Sammy is the guy, you know, and got to be healthy, got to make the plays. And they also talk about Sammy's buy-in, which we've discussed a little bit on the show, but it has been noticed and noted during the spring OTAs that by Tyrod Taylor and I think Sean McDermott to some extent, that they're getting the kind of attention to detail and buy-in from Sammy Watkins that they've needed for a while.
Yeah, you don't want to hear that about certain players, about any player, you know. Oh, he's buying in this year. So then your immediate reaction is, so was he not buying in last year? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what people start to think, you know. And so I don't know if he was or was not buying in last year, but you do need to have this guy buy in to your system, buy into what you are asking him to do so that he can go out there and make plays for you. Now, I would think that Sammy is buying in this year because Sammy's in a contract year, and Sammy wants to get paid. He wants to prove to everybody that he can be the Sammy Watkins we all thought he can be when he came out of college and what we expect him to be. And so, yeah, he's fully on board. I don't know if he wasn't on board last year or not, or the previous years, but he's fully on board. And just like Sage said, you never want to hear things like that. He's buying in this year. Yeah. He's buying in this year. I mean, we talk about that with Marcel just because of the years that Marcel has had in the past. You know, you just never want to hear that, especially from your superstar players.
Right.
You should be buying in from the rip, from the moment you are drafted and the moment you step foot into this building. You should be buying into what you are being asked to do. So
should be.
We'll see. Right.
It doesn't always happen, but
it doesn't always happen.
Speaking of Marcel Darius, Mr. Big Stuff, who was on the show with us late last week, spent last night at Marcel Darius Day at Coca-Cola Field in downtown Buffalo. He had about, I think, 1,000 kids from Boys and Girls Club there. And Marcel threw out the first pitch for last night's game. We were worried about him. We gave him some advice. It appeared that he did take a step or two in front of the actual pitching rubber and sort of lobbed one in right to the catcher. So he did not embarrass himself, which I didn't think he would.
That's right. He's an athlete.
He's an athlete.
You know, and people look at, you know, his size. And this is the thing with, like, football players and especially linemen. We forget that they are athletes. Yeah. These guys can move around. They can do things that, you know, people that are not their size can do. Yeah. Like, these guys, I've seen dudes Marcel's size actually play basketball, you know, just, like, and be very good at it. Like, can dribble and do everything, you know. So these guys are athletes. I'm glad that he didn't go out there and embarrass himself. And I'm glad that he took our advice, too.
He looks like Frank Thomas kind of in the uniform, too.
The big hurt.
The big hurt. Yeah, good for him. I know he had a –
if you would have messed up, I would have called him Mr. Big Puff.
He looked good in the uniform, and the first pitch looked good, and I know they had a great night down at Coca-Cola Field last night. All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Bill Polian, former general manager of the Bills, 8-time NFL Executive of the Year. He's a Pro Football Hall of Famer. He has some thoughts on the Bills, obviously, and Sean McDermott. We haven't talked to Bill since Combine, I think, right?
Combine, so when he dropped months. That headline on us.
Yeah, the Marv Levy headline. We'll talk to Bill about that. We'll talk to Bill about the Jets. Are they really tanking? That sort of thing. Bill Polian joins us when we return. Come on back for that. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
Got the update from One Bills Drive over at New Era Field inside the stadium. The Bills are on the field for day two of their mandatory mini camp. LeSean McCoy back on the field today after getting yesterday off due to a stomach ailment. Defensive tackle Kyle Williams is back on the field as well, back at practice after suffering a stiff neck yesterday. The Bills will wrap things up in about an hour or so here at One Bills Drive, and then they finish up the mini camp tomorrow. Then it's almost 6 weeks off before the start of training camp for the team. New England Patriots coach Bill Belichick says he is finished celebrating the Super Bowl comeback win after their ring ceremony last week. Belichick says, quote, "We need to move on to 2017. He went on to say, quote, "The 17 team hasn't done anything yet. None of us have." Bill Belichick in New England. Philadelphia Eagles have signed standout left tackle Jason Peters to a one-year contract. That deal now runs through 2019. He is 35 years old. Peters had 2 years left on his current contract. A nine-time Pro Bowler, anchor of the Eagles' offensive line since 2009 when he was picked up in a trade with the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo Sabres have signed goaltender Linus Allmark to a two-year contract extension, reportedly an average annual value of $750,000. Allmark appeared in 21 NHL games over the last 2 years. He spent most of last season with the Rochester Americans, where he led the league in saves. He was a sixth-round pick of the Sabres in the 2012 NHL draft. Buffalo Bisons continue their seven-game homestand tonight. Lehigh Valley at Coca-Cola Field, 7:05 first pitch. Left-hander T.J. House will be on the mound for the Bisons. The Bisons had 11 base hits last night and then an early lead, six runs in the first inning, but wound up losing to Lehigh Valley by a score of 9-7. Game two of the series coming up tonight at Coca-Cola Field. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones at our broadcast studio. It is a beautiful day here in Orchard Park, Donald. This is one of those days we need to be outside, and we're not.
We definitely need to be outside. We got to work that out.
Well, we'll be outside at training camp.
We will. But those are not beautiful days, though. Those are like hot and.
That'll be fine.
I'm sure it'll be fun.
It'll be fine for us. 5 or 6 weeks away, we'll be live at training camp every day. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a familiar name, familiar voice for Western New Yorkers. He was served as the Bills' general manager for several years in the Super Bowl run, a Pro Football Hall of Fame inductee a couple of years ago. Now ESPN NFL analyst, front office insider for ESPN. Happy to have our friend Bill Polian on the Subway Fresh Take line. Bill, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones. Thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure, guys. Nice to be with you.
Did you enjoy yourself at the Kelly Golf Tournament last week? As usual, it was a little rainy and a little cold, but I think you're used to that for that event, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure. It seems that that's always the case with the weather, but I had a great time. It's great to see everyone. Got a chance to spend some time with Marv on Sunday night at the gala. And then had a great day on the golf course with the great group of people that I played with. So it was a terrific weekend, really enjoyable.
Bill, if you guys are getting rained on every year, have you ever tried to talk to Jim about moving it back in June?
Well, it's been that traditional date, you know, and what's amazing about it is that, 31 years after its inception, it's still going strong. Jim's long since retired from active play. So I think that's a weekend that everybody kind of puts on their calendar. And we do it rain or shine, and it's more often rain, but so what? It's a great time.
You know, one thing about that weekend, Bill, and it's been said before, that is the unofficial, almost official now, reunion of your Super Bowl-era team, which, you know, in many respects, I know that teams get bonded, teams have a special bond. This has gone above and beyond what most teams do in terms of staying together. 31 years, it's the same core group typically of players who come back for this. It's a pretty special weekend and a pretty special bond that team shares now, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it really is. And I don't know what started it, but it just – well, first of all, it was an era when there was no free agency.
Mm-hmm.
So many of these players came in – right out of college or right out of the USFL, and spent their entire years with the Buffalo, or you know, vast majority of their careers with the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo, got married, raised their children there. Many stayed, Steve Tasker being and Mark Kelso being prime examples. But you know, everybody stayed in touch. We had such great success that You know, to this day, as the saying goes, you know, you can't buy a drink. People are very kind and remember us. But it was such a special time for all of us that I think that bond just grew and grew. And we went through a lot of hard times. The losses, of course, were real tough. But we stayed together. And as Marv said, you know, expect adversity, expect more to conquer it. We did. And then we've remained close through the years, through thick and thin. You know, the tragedy of Ken Holt's passing and Jim's illness and so on. So, you know, for whatever reason, I think the tournament is a big part of it because we all come together. It is our annual reunion, and everybody catches up with everybody. Time is an amazing thing. You know, I remember the kids of the players coming in on Saturday. You probably do too, John, and playing touch football on the field when they were just little guys, you know, little tykes. And now Jim Richard introduced me to his grandson at the tournament. And it surely made me feel old, but very proud too.
Yeah.
And another thing that I think was striking, I'll never forget this, when Ken Holt passed, there were numerous wives at that service in Mississippi and spending a weekend with Kay Hull and her family. It's as though it was still, you know, 1990 again. And they've never lost that feeling for one another through thick and thin.
Hey, Bill, in today's football with the free agency and how much guys move around, John and I always talk about this and we go back and forth on it. Do you feel like teams today have that same bond?
It's hard. It's hard because teams don't stay together. We just had the 10th reunion of our Super Bowl winner in Indianapolis, and it was great to see everybody. And there were a great number of players who came back. But that's a special team because you've been to the big game as we were four times with this group in Buffalo, and that probably adds to it, and it adds to the stability of the team. Guys stay longer, but. It's absolutely true that in today's day and age, there isn't the kind of bonding that goes on or that went on then when you stayed with a team for a long time, sometimes even your whole career. So that's rare in today's game.
We're on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with Pro Football Hall of Famer Bill Polian, talking about a variety of topics. And Bill, you were part of the series of interviews our group did for the Top 10 Moments in Bill's History, a series that just began on MSG Network on Monday night. And you had a lot to say about, you were around many of those great moments. The one thing that struck me was the day after Super Bowl 25, the Niagara Square reception in front of City Hall, on the steps of City Hall. I always think that was maybe not just one of the top 10 moments in Bill's history, but to me, one of the great moments in Buffalo history, to have that sort of reception for a team that just came off a bitter loss. It was an unbelievable moment, wasn't it?
It certainly was, and it speaks volumes, maybe says it all, about what kind of city and Buffalo is and what kind of area Western New York is. Because in a courageous and heartbreaking defeat, thousands and thousands of people came out just to say, you know, we're proud of you, thank you. It was a marvelous, marvelous time, and one that I'll never forget. You know, of all of the memories, all of them great, that I have of our time together in Buffalo, that may be the most remarkable of all.
Bill, what was your mindset when, you know, they informed you guys that you were going down there, and then when you pulled around the corner and you just saw everybody out there cheering for you, what was your mindset when you first saw that?
Well, we knew we were going, there was going to be an event. And we didn't really get a chance to see the crowd until we came out on the platform overlooking or attached to City Hall, until we came through the doors leading out to the platform. And it was just absolutely breathtaking. I remember everybody turning around saying, holy cow, look at this. This is amazing. And one thing that always sticks in my mind, as your listeners and viewers know, to the right, as you look out from City Hall onto the square, federal building is to the federal courthouse is to your right, across the street. There were justices out there with their robes on, standing there and being part of the ceremony. And then I later heard that one federal judge, I think it was a federal judge, decreed that on Friday before the Super Bowl, everyone had to come to court wearing something Bills, and he threw a lawyer out because the lawyer didn't have any Bills gear on. And that tells you where the Bills are in the pecking order of life in Western New York.
The wheels of justice ground to a halt that day to celebrate the Bills. Hey, one other, and the other moment, and it was on the show last Monday, but I know you were a big part of this too. It was only a week and a half before that day we were just talking about, 51-3 AFC Championship game over the Raiders. We were talking about that the other day and the nature of that game. Because of the lopsided nature of that game, Bill, that game, that day in the stadium became like a celebration. The game was out of reach for the Raiders, and so the Bills, probably to their credit, the players and the fans could all celebrate for essentially for the entire second half. It was kind of a wild scene that day.
It was. I remember just being shocked at how swiftly we dispatched the Raiders. They weren't ready for the no huddle offense. Everybody knows the story, but it's true. I was walking down the tunnel maybe 2 hours or so before the game, and there was a pay telephone at the end of the tunnel just before you got to the field. And there were several Raiders on it or waiting to get on it, making reservations to Tampa for the Super Bowl. They thought it was a lock. And once the ball was snapped, they just were unprepared defensively. And they had lost Bo Jackson the previous week in a playoff game. So offensively, they were at a disadvantage, but defensively, they didn't have an idea of what we were like or how we were going to play, and they didn't know how to handle Andre in the slot, and the tempo just ruined them. But that's not unique. When I was with Carolina a few years later, I tried to tell our players about what the tempo was like and our coaches, and they said, yeah, we'll be ready. And the score, I think, was 7-6 at the half. Maybe we were ahead, or 7-3. And the Bills stepped on the gas in the second half, and it was over in about 12 minutes.
Bill Polian on the line with us, plays a prominent role in our series, the top 10 moments in Buffalo Bills history and the Bills top 10. It airs on MSG Network. There's another airing coming up next Monday night with the top 10 offensive performers in Bills history. And it's Monday nights throughout the middle of July, the Buffalo Bills top 10 series on MSG. Bill joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Bill, I want to turn your attention to a couple of current issues in the NFL, including the way the New York Jets have approached this offseason and what lies ahead. You were asked the other day, I believe, on a radio show about whether the Jets were positioning themselves to essentially tank the season. Is that possible in the NFL to tank?
Well, I think it's close to possible. It seems clear to me that that's what Cleveland did last year. The Jets are a different story, and I made that clear. I believe it was on the Mike and Mike show that you're to which you're referring. I can't argue from a football standpoint that any of the veteran players that the Jets released were playing anywhere near to the level that they were being compensated. Mm-hmm. These were all guys who had not had either were injured or whose careers had taken a pretty precipitous downturn, and many of whom were long in the tooth as football players go. So you can't argue with the fact that Mike Maccagnan and his staff are trying to get the salaries in line with production. Now, what we'll see going forward is what they do with the cut to 53, what they do to try and improve the team, maybe via trades. My belief right now is that they're just doing the right thing for their organization, and that's especially there's a special consideration that exists now that didn't prior to this last collective bargaining agreement, because you can carry cap room forward now. So if they're judicious with their cap room, and they draft well, they can carry that forward and have the opportunity to sign some players down the line that opportunity didn't exist in the past. So, you know, we'll see how they approach it. My guess is that they'll be pretty active trying to improve the team. Cleveland did not. As you recall, they lost their kicker, I think, to injury on the eve of the season, even the season opener. And Robbie Gould was out there, Robbie Gould later signed with the New York Giants and had quite a nice year. They passed him over and brought in an unknown kicker who I think missed two or three field goals the following week. It was clear that they weren't going to spend any money to try and improve the team. And to me, that's what worries me. When we start getting into a situation such as you saw in basketball with the Philadelphia 76ers, where they say, you know, there is no effort to win this year, I think we then put our fans in a situation where they begin to question, you know, what the integrity of the organization is.
Hey, Bill, do you think we'll get a good understanding of what they're doing? Or even will your mindset change if McCown is the quarterback versus Hackenberg or vice versa?
No, I don't think so. I think, again, they're doing the right thing there. They put a second-round draft choice into Hackenberg. They're going to let McCown hopefully win the job, earn the job, and then let Hackenberg play at some point during the season. If McCown doesn't play well, or God forbid if he's hurt and he's got obviously a history of some injury, then Hackenberg or Petty, whoever wins that job in camp, will step in. That's perfectly okay. I mean, they're trying to find out if they have a quarterback, and no one can argue with that. The question is, you know, what do they do with the cut to 53? They're very light in the receiver department, but that said, this was mentioned yesterday on our show on ESPN NFL Live. They have a lot of young players that they probably like that they've drafted who haven't gotten on the field yet. And so we'll have to see how those guys who are now going to get on the field get to play. The example is Ben Ajulana, a young man that I drafted in Indianapolis who's now gotten a starting job at tackle. He's gone through his apprenticeship. He played at Villanova, so it was a big jump into the National Football League. We'll see how he does now. So they're going through that process, and to me, that is more of a building project. Clearly, looks like more of a building process than anything other than that. But when you don't try and do everything you can to win, or put the best team you can on the field, then you know people justifiably complain, and that's not necessarily a good thing.
On the line with Bill Polian, former Bills GM, ESPN NFL front office insider. Last time we had you on the show, Bill, at the Combine in Indy 4 months ago now, you got everybody's attention when you compared Sean McDermott to Marv Levy, the Hall of Fame coach. Anything you've seen or heard since then that makes you want to amplify that statement or that comparison at all?
Well, I think I said Marv-like.
Marv-like, yes.
I don't think I L-I-K-E. I don't think I compared them, you know, in any other way. But I still feel that way, and I feel that, you know, that more than ever now, seeing how he's conducted himself throughout the off season and how he's structured the roster and structuring the organization, and you know, he's got a blueprint, and I firmly believe it's the right one, and he's following it and doing what he needs to do. And look, there's a break-in period for everybody. There's a learning curve for everybody. There'll be that for Sean, for the coaching staff, for the players. But I think that this team and this organization is absolutely on the right track without question.
And the last thing, Bill, then, is minicamp wraps up tomorrow for the Bills, and then, you know, we waited 5 weeks or so until training camp. And you get the league-wide view in your role as ESPN's front office insider. To you, what is the biggest question mark surrounding the 2017 Buffalo Bills as they get set to go to camp in about a month or so?
Well, I think, you know, who's going to emerge at receiver? That's one thing. Who's going to back up Shady? The loss of Gillis Lee, left a void there that has to be filled. I don't have any question that the defense will come together. It's going to take a little while, but and I hate to put pressure on guys, but I think it'll come more sooner than later because it's so similar to what Schwartzy did when he was there. So the guys who played there when Schwartzy was there will have some recall, and I think you'll see them get cohesive relatively soon. And then, to me, I want to see how the offensive line performs. That's an area that I think there's some question marks as to how well it can perform. And let's see. That those, to me, would be the areas of consideration. Everybody's going to focus on a secondary because of the loss of the free agent to New England. But Sean will get that straightened out. There won't be any. I think in time that group will play well. The offensive line performance and protecting the passer is the issue, and how they adapt to the new system, which, by the way, is, I think I've told you, Murph, I think is perfectly suited to Tyrod's talents, and we'll get Charles Clay, I think, more involved than he has been in the past, and it's suited well to his talents as well. But you got to be able to block it, and so that, to me, is the key.
Music to our ears here. Thank you, Bill. Thanks for doing this. Have a great summer. We hope to see you soon.
Thanks, Murph. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bill Polian, the former Bills general manager, Pro Football Hall of Famer. He's on ESPN. You see him there. He's their front office insider. You can probably, I would guess, he's going to be there over the next couple of weeks or so, part of their NFL Insiders show. Bill Polian joining us on the Subway Fresh Steak Hotline. Subway, eat fresh, right? Music to your ears when you hear about Charles Clay being a big part of the offense and
yeah,
about
I think
Tyrod.
I think he should be a big part of this offense. I thought he should have been last year. I think the offense does suit what Tyrod Taylor does well, and I think, you know, it also suits what Charles Clay and what the rest of the receivers can do as well, especially Sammy Watkins. And then it definitely suits Shady McCoy's game. Shady wants to be able to read the entire line, cut back, and make plays. That is his game. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if you didn't see – or if I wouldn't be shocked if we saw Shady go for some crazy amounts of yards just because – this offense is, I'm telling you, it is best for what Shady does.
That walks us right into today's Twitter poll, and we welcome you to join us on that. Who will be the biggest Bills offensive playmaker? And I guess, to be honest, it should say, who will be the most important big playmaker on the Buffalo offense? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Who's going to provide the big plays for the Buffalo offense? Sage Rosenfels wrote that post for thescore.com about how the Bills were one-sided. Big plays out of the running game last year. What, 77 explosive plays out of the running game? A lot of that Shady McCoy. But what about 2017? And as Sage Rosenfels said, that's on Sammy Watkins to help the Bills get better when it comes to the passing game. Who will be the big play offensive playmakers for the Bills this year? That's our Twitter poll, getting a lot of response to this. About two-thirds of you, 65%, say it is Shady, LeSean McCoy. 16% say Tyrod Taylor. 15% say Sammy Watkins. 4% have somebody else in mind. I'll go with Sammy. I mean, if Sammy's making big plays, look, I don't know, you know, yeah, I anticipate a similar level of production from the run game, but if Sammy's making big plays, as he was at the end of the season a couple of years ago, I think this Bills offense has the potential to be certainly more explosive than they were last year and maybe really good.
I still have to stick with Tyrod Taylor. I think if now Sammy's on the field, it helps Tyrod Taylor and it helps Shady. And so that's why Sage Rosenfeld said that. You know, it's on Sammy Watkins to help this entire offense. But I think Tyrod Taylor ultimately has to make the throws, you know, to Sammy. Not just deep throws down the field. Yeah, we want to see those big bombs down the field. But also those 20-yard in cuts, you know, 15-yard in cuts that can turn into huge plays for Sammy Watkins. If he can be consistent in doing that, then it will help Shady in the run game. It will help a guy like Charles Clay. It will help even himself, when he drops back, be able to run the ball when he needs to run the ball because they have to pay attention to Sammy down the field. If you don't have that threat that you can complete those passes down the field, it doesn't help you in your run game because teams don't have to play you a certain way, you know. And so I think Tyrod Taylor is the one that's going to have to make those big plays this year.
All right, big playmakers in the Buffalo offense. Who do you think it'll be? Give us a call, 803-0550. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it on Twitter. You can vote in our Twitter poll or weigh in via Twitter. Who will be the big playmakers on the Buffalo offense? That's what we should have put up on Twitter.
Yeah. What did we put up?
Who will be the offensive playmakers? Obviously, LeSean's going to make plays. But who will be the big playmakers?
Oh, yeah.
LeSean could be the answer to that, too. Give us a call. Let us know.
Make the biggest plays.
Yeah, we'll make the biggest plays. 803-0550, toll free, 1-888-552-550. We thank Bill Polian for joining us on the Subway Fresh Steak Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Back with more, including your phone calls, when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you on this Wednesday afternoon. The Bills should be in the next 15, 20 minutes or so wrapping up today's OTA, the second of three OTAs. Hopefully we'll get an update from the field in a moment or two. I don't think there's any breaking news other than the fact that Kyle Williams and LeSean McCoy were back on the field for the workout today. Here's a call from Jim in Lakeview. Hello, Jim. You're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I was weighing in on... You know, I agree with Donald. I hope to God it's Tyrod Taylor that's our number one playmaker. And I'm a little bit puzzled at the response that McCoy would or should be our number one playmaker. I mean, recent NFL history shows you that if your number one playmaker is your running back, that's a recipe for failure, okay? Most of the recent Super Bowls have been dominated by quarterback-dominated offenses. You see offenses that are dominated by running backs in recent history, like with Damian Tomlinson with his 2,000 yards, or Adrian Peterson when he had his 2,000 yards, those were non-playoff teams. You just can't win on a consistent basis when the thrust of your offense is the running game. The running game's important, no doubt about it, but if you've got a choice between a strong running game and a strong passing game, boy, it's got to be the strong passing game every single time, and that indicates that your quarterback or maybe even your star receiver is the big playmaker. I can't see how an offense that's driven completely by McCoy is going to get us over the hump. It just has to be in tune with the modern NFL and the modern NFL rules, and that means your passing game has to set the tone. It has to set up the running game, and if you're relying on your running game to bring you to the promised land, there's not much of a track record of success.
Well, Jim, I think you overstate it, but I hear what you're saying. I do think that you need balance in your offense, and I want to hear what Donald says about this, but I think you need balance. Certainly the Bills' offense has been out of balance the last couple of years, heavily weighted towards the run. They do need a more effective passing game, but there are recent Super Bowl success stories and successful teams, including Seattle Seahawks, who were more of a defense run game oriented than a passing game. And there are others as well. So I think you overstated a little bit, but I also am looking for balance and a better passing game. Donald, your take on this, Mr. Jones?
I think you need to be balanced, you know. But I look at the last couple of Super Bowl winning teams, and they all ran the ball a lot. You know, even last year. You see, we get so caught up with the Patriots and Tom Brady being their quarterback. Tom Brady makes plays when he has to throw the ball. But the New England Patriots were fifth in the league in rushing attempts last year. They run the ball a lot. They just make plays in the passing game. Their stars are in the passing game, but they run the ball a lot. The year before them, Denver Broncos, they won because they ran the ball and they had a good defense. Peyton Manning was a shell of himself. He just was not Peyton Manning. The year before that, Seattle, they won the Super Bowl. They ran the ball and they had a good defense. So, yeah, you can win with that recipe, but you do need to have a balanced offense. You need to have a quarterback who can make plays when you need him to make plays.
But that takes us to our Twitter poll, and we want to hear from you. Who do you think the big plays on offense are going to come from this year, the explosive plays? It goes to Sage Rosenfeld's post on thescore.com. Who do you look for from the big plays this year? The Bills lacking in big plays on the passing attack last year, and I think that's why my choice would be Sammy Watkins. 14% of you think he would be the big playmaker on the Bills in 2017. 15% say Tyrod Taylor. 65% say LeSean McCoy, which I think is a little bit out of whack. McCoy's going to make his plays. He's going to make big runs. They did. What did Rosenfeld's – 77 explosive plays in the run game last year, by far leading the league, but not enough in the passing game.
Right, not enough in the passing game. But they are going to lean on LeSean McCoy.
Like, yeah,
they're not going to change the offense around from last year, from the previous year. They are going to lean on that running game and use that to help out in the passing game, which is what this offense does.
Yeah.
It's a zone scheme, and you play action off of that to big plays down the field in the passing game. But you also will have some dink and dunk type of stuff underneath as well, you know. And what they'll do is they'll use, like Sage talked about, Sammy and receivers who can actually catch and run with the ball, bubble screens and things like that. You know, maybe you'll even have a Charles Clay catching some bubble screens or tight end screens, different types of things like that, and allow those guys to catch the ball and run. And essentially that is an extension of your run game when you are doing it like that, knowing that the Patriots do that. You know, they use those bubble screens and those quick now routes as an extension of their run game. And so I don't think they're going to change what they did in the previous couple of years. They're going to run the ball.
But they do need explosive plays in the passing game. Your thoughts on that? The phone line's open, 803-0550. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Or via Twitter. That is our Twitter poll. The Bills on the field over at New Era Field today. Yesterday, after day one of the minicamp, among those talking to the media was wide receiver Walt Powell, the former undrafted free agent for the Buffalo Bills, who last Friday, it was revealed, has been suspended 4 games for a failed performance-enhancing drug test. Walt Powell is going to miss the first 4 games of the regular season while he continues to practice here with the Bills in minicamp. After the workout yesterday, Walt Powell talked to the media and was asked about the events of the last week and his 4-game suspension.
I want to take full accountability of what happened. You know, like I said in my statement, just apologize and just I just want to move on and just, you know, focus on mini camp and training camp.
Do you feel just the fact that everybody is competing here and maybe in your situation where you're not penciled in as a starter, it's a harder road to travel. Does having this suspension, do you think, add to the challenges that you're going to have to just make the roster?
I mean, you know, it's always a challenge just making a roster, so I'm just going to keep fighting and just doing what I got to do, make the team.
What kind of advice, if you've gotten from, say, older teammates or, you know, just the kind of things that you guys get from their players who care about it?
Just encouraging me and just tell them just keep fighting and just keep working hard and keep making plays and just focus on the future.
Well, this has happened before with guys that they've been suspended for things that they've taken, you know, that they didn't realize might have had a banned substance. Do you think that's something that the league should look into as far as the new CBA and what the players' union should maybe look into as far as the next time around?
Like I said, like, I just want to just focus on mini camp and training camp, so I just go from there.
You've put together a pretty consistent spring here. Would you say that might be the biggest difference this year, maybe, as opposed to last year? I know your opportunities were probably fewer and farther between last year in terms of getting offensive reps, but it just seems like your play is more consistent this spring. Would you agree with that? And if so, why is that happening?
Yes, definitely. Just last year I started slower and just finished faster, and now just that I'm feeling more comfortable and stuff, I'm able to start a new slate, you know, new offense, new team, and just really just keep making plays every time the ball come my way.
Does it worry you just knowing Sean McDermott's reputation, button-down guy, no tolerance kind of guy, that could be held against you by him, just knowing the nature of the coach?
Oh, not at all, you know, because that's the kind of coach he is, and I respect that. And like I said, I'm just going to just keep busting my butt and just keep working hard.
Walt Powell, Bills wide receiver, looking at a 4-game suspension for performance-enhancing drugs in violation of the drug policy for the league. It's kind of funny to hear, you know, does it bother you because of Sean McDermott's reputation? Sean McDermott's just getting started at this thing.
Right.
You know, I think we anticipate that he would be a no-tolerance kind of guy, button-down guy, but, you know, it remains to be seen. And this is the kind of thing that we've talked about a couple of times. There will be bumps in the road, including Walt Powell's suspension, hopefully not others, but there will be down the road that we'll have to kind of wait and see how Sean McDermott responds, I believe. I don't know. Is he a knee-jerk guy saying, whoop, failed a PED test, you're out? I don't know if he's that kind of guy.
I don't know if he's that kind of guy. He's talked about Walt Powell looking good in practice. So I think that he, you know, he's going to wait and see. I would think that Walt is still appealing this, and so you have to wait
typically
for
typically they appeal.
Yeah,
although
they
he
appeal.
Did not
so
say
you
that.
Have to. He didn't say that, and I don't know if I've even heard that. But typically they do, and if he is, you got to wait and see how that plays out. And quite frankly, Walt has to just come in to practice every day and be better than everybody else, you know, if he wants to make this team, because he is I mean, he has an uphill battle now. He had an uphill battle before. Now he definitely has an uphill battle to make this team.
PEDs, performance-enhancing drugs, Donald. You know, players, they have to know where the line is, right? And there is a line, and it's is it hard to follow? I guess this is my question as a former player. Is it hard to follow the regulations on what is acceptable, what is permissible as far as PEDs and what is not? I mean, look, we're in the middle of the offseason. It is all about getting bigger, faster, stronger, more durable, you know, withstanding injuries. It's all about that right now all over the league. And so guys will, you know, take supplements, right, and nutritional supplements and anything they can to accomplish their goals. How difficult is it to follow the rules, I guess, is my question. And where is the team's standpoint on this? Are you on your own when you go out and do this stuff?
Listen, we live in a day and age now where there is so much emphasis on being healthy, right? And there are gyms popping up everywhere. And, you know, it's just everything is about being healthy. And so people are paying so much attention to what goes into their bodies. And I'm not talking athletes. I'm just talking about, you know, just everyone is paying attention to what goes into their body. This drink has 250 calories. That means I need to at least work that off in a workout. Like, people are actually doing that a lot more than they've ever done, right? And so if you have everyone doing that, if you're a professional athlete, you know that there are things in drinks that you can't take. And you know that there is a list of things that you can't take. And so you need to understand what you are putting into your body. I have no sympathy for people who take things and say, oh, man, it was a mistake. I didn't know that it had this in it.
But there's so many products out there. I mean, can you keep track of what you're doing?
Yeah, when you go to take something, look at it. And it's on the back of it, it says, this is what's in there. And I'm sorry, like, you get paid a lot of money to follow certain rules and certain guidelines. And, yeah, you need to know this is on the list. I can't take this. You know, if you're one of those guys that are – because I never took you know, like creatine or any of that stuff. I didn't do protein shakes, any of that stuff. So I never had to worry about it. But for those guys who do, you need to understand what's going in your body. Yeah. It's your job. It's your body. It's your temple. Understand what you're putting into it. Understand the list of things that you can't take.
Interesting, though. And Walt Powell, you know, a guy who obviously would be concerned about a spot on the roster, maybe going as hard as he could to get a spot on the roster. And this hurts. This doesn't help.
It definitely hurts. And, you know, the thing is, you can't hide it. They're going to find it, you know. So this is why I say you need to understand everything that's going, like every single thing that's going into your body, because you cannot hide it. They're going to test you, and they're going to find it. And you see every year, guys, something like this happens, and the guy says the same thing. I didn't know something was in it. I made a mistake. Don't be that guy. I mean, if you keep seeing different guys get in trouble for it, don't be that person.
Okay. Hey, the Bills coming off the practice field as we speak right now after minicamp day two. Going on that field at the end of this year on Friday, December 29th, you know this by now, is the World Juniors hockey game, outdoor game, U.S. versus Canada. USA Hockey against Team Canada in the World Juniors on December 29th at New Era Field. They're going to put that ice rink in the stadium. And today, the organizers for USA Hockey unveiled the special jersey that the U.S. National Junior Team will wear in that game against Canada. Those of you watching on TV can see it. It's a Bills jersey, basically, if you're not watching on TV. It's a Buffalo Bills football jersey that they're going to wear, the hockey team, USA World Junior Hockey Team, is going to wear to play hockey in. It's pretty amazing. Press conference at KeyBank Center today. The new jersey for that game only, for the game against Team Canada. Big numbers on the front and back. It looks like a Bills jersey. The main color, the same blue that the Bills use. It is going to be available for purchase this fall by fans who want to pre-order it. And you can go to BuffaloWorldJuniors.com to pre-order. But the World Junior, the game, the U.S. versus Canada, Friday, December 29th, coming to New Era Field. The jersey's unveiled today, and Team USA is going to look like the Buffalo Bills on skates.
Wow, the Buffalo Bills on skates.
I mean, that is a Bills jersey. You can call it a hockey sweater if you like. That's a Bills jersey they're wearing.
It's definitely a Bills jersey. I think I'm going to have to get me one.
You might as well get a Bills jersey.
I know, but it does. The only difference is the long sleeves. So I think I'm going to have to get that.
All right. It's a Bills jersey, basically, with long sleeves. It's a hockey sweater that looks exactly like the Buffalo. Nothing wrong with that.
No.
I think it's going to be kind of interesting. It certainly will get national attention, right? I mean, And, you know, and let's, you know, I know the World Juniors are big, but World Juniors, it's an outdoor game to get attention anyway, but will World Juniors get that much national attention? Well, the fact that they're going to be wearing the Buffalo Bills jersey, yeah, there'll be a little bit more attention, I think.
I saw someone tweet out today, more evidence that the Bills are America's team.
On that day, they will be America's team. The World Junior Team USA team will be wearing a Bills jersey. Pretty interesting. All right, when we come back, we're going to hear from some of the players as they come off the field today after today's minicamp session. We think we're going to hear from Gerald Hodges, the linebacker just signed to a contract about a month ago. So that's coming up next. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, coming to you live from Orchard Park. Across the parking lot at New Era Field, the Bills have wrapped up day two of the mandatory minicamp, and safety Jordan Poyer is addressing the media right now. Let's listen in as he talks about day two of today's minicamp session.
The verbiage, you know, guys haven't played with each other before, and so just being able to learn the defense from square one and be able to communicate since square one and understand you know, where you're supposed to be, when you're supposed to be there. I think that's a huge key.
Through the course of, you know, reviewing practice tape the next day or being in the room with the coaches, what are some of the things that coaches harping on, maybe cleaning up, tightening up as a unit, maybe on the back end?
You know, just finishing plays, angles to the football. You know, always, every day is going to be communication, whether it's hand signals, verbal. You know, I think, like I said, you know, we're growing as a defense each and every day, and especially in the meeting rooms, and then you take it out here on the football field. You know, you can see it in practice, and it's exciting, and, you know, it's exciting to be a part of. And, you know, I can't wait to just keep growing with this unit.
What's the biggest thing you learn from Coach Bird every day?
You know, biggest thing, there's a lot of things you learn from Coach Bird, man. He's a great coach for one, and he's played in the game. You know, and whenever you get a guy that's coaching you that has played in the game in the NFL and, you know, has, I don't know, X amount of picks. I think it's 40-something picks. You know, it's a guy that you want to listen to and a guy you want to play for. And you know, Coach Burr is always coming in with a lot of inspirational stuff, you know, to keep the guys motivated. And it, like I said, it's fun to be a part of.
Way back from the injury last year?
Yeah, 100%. It's exciting to be back out on the football field. You know, it's definitely a blessing to, like I said, just put the cleats on again and be out here on the football field after the injury last season. And, you know, I put that behind me, and, you know, I'm excited to move forward with this group of guys.
In comparing spring ball to training camp, pads come on, obviously for, like, offensive, defensive line, and those matchups, it's a big difference. Uh-huh. What's it like for defensive backs against wide receiver when you're just throwing on the pads? Is there much more you can tell or glean from a wide receiver or a defensive back once the pads go on, or see it now already?
I believe so. You know, I believe, you know, like you said, with the interior, it's a huge difference. I think with the outside, you know, with the wide receivers and the DBs is a big difference. And plus, you're able to finish plays in a more competitive, more explosive position, I guess you would say, as far as the ball carrier and being able to thud up a guy rather than, you know, kind of break down and tag off without pads on. And so it's always an exciting time of the year to put the pads back on, and, you know, it's training camp's going to be fun.
What do you see? Gerald Hodges, a guy who's played up in front of you, what do you see in his game?
You know, everything, man. The guy can run. You know, like I said, it's just a fun group all around to be a part of and to play with guys like that. And, you know, Marcel Darius and, you know, Ramon Humber. It's just all those guys up front. You know, I'm learning from those guys as well. And, you know, I look at them as older guys who have been here. And, you know, it's, you know, I just want to play well for them and you know, hope that they can count on me come Sundays.
Thanks, Jordan Poyer, Bills safety. Says all the right things. You know, we've talked a little bit about him, Donald. I thought there was going to be another answer at safety, but the more I watch, and we only watch a limited amount of practice time, I think, okay. I mean, I know Micah Hyde's solid, and I'm okay with Jordan Poyer moving
forward.
Yeah,
I think I'm good with Jordan Poyer. I think I'm good with him playing alongside Micah Hyde, and I've had a chance to watch those guys in practice. They're both moving around to the ball, and they're smart players. Both of them are smart players, and I think that's what you need back there at the safety position.
Yeah, they're both smart players and both getting a lot of time in this defense.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, think about all that they've been able to do over the 6 weeks or so of minicamp. They're back there together, side by side, right?
Right.
All the time.
Exactly.
All right, we're going to break. When we come back, we're going to be, hopefully be joined by Andre Holmes, Bills wide receiver, in studio with us to talk about day two of the minicamps, where his game is at, and what he looks for moving forward. So come on back for that. Plus more on today's day two of the minicamp coming up, including your phone calls at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Got the update from One Bills Drive, where the Bills have just wrapped up day two of their mandatory minicamp session on the field at New Era Field under brilliant sunshine. LeSean McCoy back on the field today. McCoy out yesterday with a stomach ailment, but he was back today. Defensive tackle Kyle Williams back at practice today after missing yesterday with a stiff neck. One more minicamp session for the Bills. It is tomorrow again at midday, and then after tomorrow, the team scatters for almost 6 weeks until the start of training camp as minicamp continues for the Buffalo Bills. Eric Decker, first day as a free agent, is visiting the Tennessee Titans, according to NFL Network. Decker officially released by the New York Jets yesterday after the team could not find a trade partner. He's 30 years old. Decker coming off a torn rotator cuff and a hip injury. Bill Belichick says he is finished celebrating last season's Super Bowl victory, the 2016 Patriots team. Belichick said after last weekend's ring ceremony, quote, "We need to move on to 2017. He went on to say, quote, this 17 team hasn't done anything yet. Belichick has turned the page. Philadelphia Eagles have signed left tackle Jason Peters to a one-year contract extension. His new deal now runs through 2019. According to Adam Schefter, $15.5 million of the $32 million owed to Peters over the next three seasons is guaranteed. Peters, 35 years old, nine-time Pro Bowler, the anchor of the Eagles' offensive line since 2009 when he was acquired in a trade with the Buffalo Bills. Sabres announced yesterday the signing of goaltender Linus Ullmark to a two-year contract extension. He's appeared in 21 NHL games over the last two seasons, a sixth-round pick of the Sabres back in 2012. Spent most of this past season with the Rochester Americans. He led the league in saves and in minutes played. And baseball, the Bisons home tonight, game two of their seven-game homestand. They play Lehigh Valley at 7:05. Left-hander T.J. House, with his 5-5 record, is on the mound for the Herd, 7:05 tonight. That's the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and joining us in studio, just off the practice field, happy to have wide receiver Andre Holmes with us. Andre, thanks for coming by. Just
thanks
off the field a minute ago, right?
Mm-hmm, thank you.
How's this gone so far, this two-day minicamp so far?
Oh, man, it's been going great. You know, we're getting a lot of, you know, hard work in. You know, we're building as a team, you know, as a family, and, you know, we're putting in that work to, you know, become a winning, you know, a winning organization, and get that, you know, playoff caliber like Coach McDermott says.
We're focused now on this three-day camp, and you and your veteran teammates anywhere have been here since April 4th, really. This is the culmination of almost 2.5 months of work for you, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, we've been, you know, installing the playbook, and now going against the defense and, you know, setting up so that we can get it moving for training camp when we come back in another month.
Was there anything different from this week as opposed to all of the weeks of OTAs? Like, did the intensity kick up at all?
I think so far we've had a lot of competition periods, but we've been doing that all throughout, you know, OTAs. But, you know, one of the things is that we've been able to get in the classroom a lot more and you know, be able to watch the film and, you know, right the same day of doing it. So that's kind of helped out a lot, you know, really, you know, exponentially as far as, you know, trying to understand, you know, just the system. Yeah. And, you know, that really is helping a lot.
Andre Holmes, Bills wide receiver, in studio with us. Andre, you were on the radar of this show. We talked to you back in March when you were signed, but before that, before free agency, I want to play you a clip from one of our shows, and this goes back to February 22nd, so a week or maybe 10 days before free agency began. We talked about you on this show as a potential free agent target for the Bills. We had no inside information, right, Donald? Nobody was sharing anything with
us. No, I don't think so. Unless they shared it with you and not me.
Maybe they talked to you. But I want you to listen to this, Andre. This is Donald and I talking about you as a under-the-radar free agent for the Bills, and this goes back like 2 or 3 weeks before you got signed. I got a guy who I think would be an upgrade over Kamar Aiken and over The Bills' own Justin Hunter, and that would be from the Raiders, Andre Holmes. Mm-hmm. And he is a big receiver, 6'4", 220-some pounds, pretty good time in the 40-yard dash. I think he came on at the end of last season for the Raiders in that really prolific passing attack. Good red zone target, you know, can go and get the ball. He made the numbers have him at about $2 million average salary last year. So for a little bit more than that, I think Andre Holmes would be a guy that maybe the Bills should take a look at. Played all 16 games last year. Andre, that's me talking about you. I sound like a scout. It's almost like somebody upstairs was listening to what we were doing on the show. Right?
Yeah, definitely. We try to be right.
So sometimes. Your bonus, really, I think there should be a little bit of your bonus coming my way. No, I'm just kidding. No, but we were banging the drum for you way back in February before you signed. Were the Bills on your radar back then in February?
I think, you know, any team that, you know, showed that they, you know, respected my game and respected the fact that, you know, I can do big things on the field was on my radar. And when the Bills, you know, reached out to me, they definitely, you know, were on the top of my radar because, you know, it's a great situation for me to mm-hmm. be able to, you know, get on the field and you know, help a team win the way I feel like I can.
How hard was it for you in Oakland, you know, once they brought in a guy like Crabtree, once they drafted Amari Cooper, how tough was that for you? Because when they draft guys in the first round and bring, it's like, oh, man, like, I'm always going to go out here and compete, but come on, like, what can I do with that?
I mean, initially it was hard, but, you know, I think those 2 years really helped me a lot. You know, I really think that, you know, early on, you know, I think I was trying to survive in the league. Yeah. And in those 2 years, I learned how to win. And that right there is a difference in how I am today. And I owe that a lot of that to those 2 years with guys like Crab and Coop, mm-hmm. and then with my receiver coach Rob Moore and Del Rio.
We were talking about this too, Andre. We talk about you a little bit on the show. Was there any sense at all in your mind that when Crabtree and Cooper show up, you were kind of, you know, bumped over a little bit, pushed down the depth chart, and maybe, you know, that works to Buffalo's benefit because you become available in free agency. But did you get the feeling like you were almost recruited over by when those guys were added to the Raiders roster?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I really, you know, they brought in a couple guys, and obviously you see the talent that they have. And, you know, I just went out there and did whatever I could and did it to the best of my ability, and it grew my game, special teams especially. And so that allowed for me to kind of showcase in other ways so that then I can come to another team and be able to, you know, produce in those ways.
What is the role that you've played here on special teams, and how did you help the Raiders on special teams? What were you doing on teams for them?
Well, right now I'm playing in every, you know, special team. So that goes – this gunner, kickoff return, and punt return. But – you know, that's basically I was, you know, one of those anchors in special teams, you know, go down and make plays, especially in gunner, you know, go especially inside the 50-yard line, you know, making sure that ball doesn't get in the end zone, you know, pinning it back deep so that the defense has good field position and those type of things. And, you know, those are the type of things that I bring as far as special teams.
I've always said punt return is like the toughest out of the four special teams or core special teams. Punt return is the toughest because it's just a long play, man. Like, you got to mm-hmm. rush up the field and then run all the way back to try to get in position to make blocks. And then if your guy breaks it, then you're running back down the field mm-hmm. with him. Which one is the toughest for you?
Kickoff return is by far the toughest for me because that's just, you know, a dead sprint mm-hmm. back. And then you got someone sprinting at you, and somehow – you have to block that guy
yeah.
when you're at a standstill. And so it is really, that is by far the hardest to me because if your guy beats you, it's your fault.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's one of the ones that I always, you know, strive to try and get better at.
When I was in college at Youngstown State, they put me on the front line in the kickoff return.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when they did it, I was like, Coach, you are bugging right now. Like, the front line, dude, you're going to put me in the front. Like, put me in the back. I can block in the back, you know, but don't put me on the front line. I got to actually pick up some blocks here. So I did not like it. I hated it. I hated being on the front line.
Every time a special teams thing comes up, Donald, you sound like a prima donna every time.
Yo, it was
every
that. Time in college, asking, I was a prima donna. I'm not going to lie. When I got here, I changed my whole mentality.
No, you had the story about DeHaven, like, oh, coach, don't make me do this.
Oh, because that's punt return. That's scary, man.
Every time special teams comes up, he has an excuse why he doesn't want
to
do it.
Hey, do you know how hard it is to catch punts in this league? That is crazy. That is some crazy stuff.
I was a punt returner. It might have been my sophomore year for the first game of the season, and that was the last time I caught punts. I was so scared back there in high school trying to catch punts. I did not know what I was doing. They just threw me back out there, because they wanted me on the field.
Yeah, that's a different beast.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's not your call, Andre, but looking forward to this Bills team, and if you get on the field a lot, say as a second or third wide receiver, is there a diminishing returns as to can you be on all four core special teams units and still be a number two, number three receiver and still be effective, I guess is the question.
I mean, it's all up to what, you know, the coaches, want me to do. I can definitely do some special teams. There's been a game where I was starting and did all four special teams, and that was a grind for sure. That was like 90 plays. It was hard, but that's just kind of like a true testament to who I am. Like, I'm going to do everything I can to really just, to help the team. You know, that's the main thing that I want to do. So whatever they want me to do, like, I'm going to do my best to do it.
As we shift gears now to you playing receiver, how do you feel like this offense suits what you do best in your receiving game?
I think it suits me, it's really been suiting me perfectly because it just allows me to, I get to the same spot every time, and really kind of play chess with the DB a little bit. And, that helps me out a lot. It really suits me well, and it's been going great so far as, the route running and all those types of things.
Which of the four quarterbacks now in camp do you find that you've developed most chemistry with, maybe through the early going here, through spring and into the first couple of days of minicamp?
Well, I think definitely with Tyrod, because I've been going a lot with them in the team periods and everything, and he's been hitting me on a lot of nice throws, and I've been getting a lot of catches from him. So definitely with Tyrod right now.
Lorenzo's listening to the show, and great job, John Murphy, calling Donald Jones out about his negative attitude on special teams. Thanks, Lorenzo.
Lorenzo's got the special teams credentials that I don't have.
Oh, yeah.
So if Lorenzo's calling you out on your reluctance to be on special teams.
He's an expert.
Look, my mentality when I got here changed, and I knew I had to play special teams, and I was good at it. And, I was like, let's do it. But when I was in college, I was like, come on. Like, I was a receiver. I wanted to catch passes, score touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
How did this become about you? We've got Andre Holmes sitting here.
I know. Hey,
I felt the same way in college. I felt the same way.
Lorenzo was probably the same way in college. He's talking junk.
Andre Holmes is with us. We have questions for you. Do you have any more questions for Andre?
I do. I got a few.
Or is it all about you still? Andre,
get back to me. Tell me.
With the Raiders, you got into that playoff game and caught a touchdown pass from Connor Cook last January, but with the quarterback gone, I think it was Christmas Eve, right, when your quarterback got hurt, Carr got hurt. How bad was the atmosphere just, like, knowing that you didn't have, your guy, the guy who had taken you that far? How tough was it going into that game?
It was really the atmosphere after the game that he got hurt. It was, everyone's kind of – it was almost like we lost.
That Christmas Eve game.
But, every week after that, you know how football players, no matter what the situation is, you always feel like you're going to win. If you don't feel that way, then there's no reason to be out on the field. Mm-hmm. So every week we always felt like we were going to have a chance. We always felt like we can do, even if we were the underdog, that we can win. And so that was kind of the mindset we had. There was no one was down. No one was being negative. Everyone was trying to be positive. So you can have a positive mindset getting on the field on Sunday or in that playoff game.
How far, if Carr had been healthy, how far do you think the Raiders might have gone last year? And I guess the real question is, how would you have matched up against the Patriots in the playoffs?
Well, I definitely thought that, obviously you had to go through the Patriots. And I thought, any given Sunday, we could have you know, obviously we would have had to get out of the first round, but I think we had a chance to really make some noise in the playoffs, and it just didn't work out that way.
What is it about Carr and that offense? Like, what is it that makes him so good in that offense at such a young age?
He's a smart guy. He understands, you know, he knows how to relate to everybody. So that means, you know, he's just really he's got a great arm, you know, and he knows how to read the defenses, you know, like he just does all the right things, and he's a great leader. And he showed that the instant he, you know, came into Oakland, is that he was a great leader.
Andre Holmes with us now, Bills wide receiver, and the Bills had a, you know, a discussion. They brought in Jeremy Maclin last week. Andre, did you have any thoughts on that at all? And you know, you've been in the meeting room and on the practice field with your guys now, but what's it like when they bring in a pretty talented guy like that and at least talk to him a little bit?
Well, I mean, it's one of those things that, like, that, you know, I came in here to win games. So if you know, the Coach McDermott or any, you know, anyone in upper management, like if they feel as though that a player can come in and help the team win, then, you know, I'm going to be okay with that. So really all I could, you know, all I was doing was just, you know, looking forward and trying to do whatever I could to, you know, make myself and my other teammates better in our OTA practices.
Coach McDermott was asked about it yesterday when he met with the media. And let's play his answer. He was asked about the wide receiver group after not getting Maclin. Obviously, he went to the Baltimore Ravens. And your name came up in Coach McDermott's response. Let's listen in.
We've got some good depth there. With you start with Zay, and then you get right down through Walt Powell's had a nice spring so far. And Des Lewis has done a nice job. You know, Philly Brown's working in there. I'll tell you, the guy that's really stood out has been Andre. He's done a phenomenal job, not only on offense, but also special teams. Very, very solid performer, day to day, consistent, and just really, that's been a nice pickup for us so far, and really appreciate his leadership.
To you know, not be able to land Maclin, obviously you guys had an interest, you brought him in for a visit. As a first time head coach, who's maybe more heavily involved with those types of
John McDermott talking yesterday,
now.
And Sean is rattling through all the receivers' names and singled you out for special praise. What do you think of that when he does that?
Well, you know, I appreciate that, you know, and, you know, really, you know, it kind of shows that, you know, he has appreciation for, you know, the type of work that I put in and you know, every day to day is, you know, I believe he said. So, you know, it's a great, you know, I appreciate it.
And he brought up special teams, and I know, you know, we're getting back. No, we're not getting
your
back.
Your area of expertise.
Do you guys get a chance to really get into special teams right now in terms of plays, or is it just more basic?
It's a little bit of both. Like, we're doing some full field. We did some full field today's kickoff and just kind of, you know, trying to figure out the fits and all those types of things. And really, we do have have full plays for every, you know, special teams group and situation. The only thing is we don't have pads on, and you really do need to have pads on for special teams. So that's really the only area in which we can't really get going at. And it won't be till training camp that we can really start figuring out how to, you know, obviously you hold in special teams that they don't call, right. You know, and those types of techniques are things that we're going to start, you know, learning.
Andre, one mini camp practice remaining that comes up tomorrow. What comes up after that for you?
Basically, you know, get home and work out at my spot in Chicago, EFT Sports, and also have a baby on the way coming up. So
soon, right?
Yeah, definitely. 18th is the due date. So
that's Sunday, right?
Yeah. So that's
you might get the call right here.
Yeah. I could be running out of
you
here
have
right
home
now.
On you?
No, I don't.
Oh, that's bad.
That is kind of bad, but you know, I'll be prepared for the next
first baby.
Second.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So you know what your weights. Well, good luck with that, and thank you very much for joining us, and congratulations on pretty good spring. You must feel pretty good about what you managed to do here in the last couple of months in Buffalo.
Oh yeah, definitely. Very, very excited for this upcoming season, and you know, to really bring, you know, win some games, mm-hmm. You know, just go out there and do work.
We're looking for that. Andre, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bills receiver Andre Holmes, one of the free agents the Bills signed in this spring. Another one they signed was linebacker Gerald Hodges just a couple of weeks ago. And coming off the field today over on the turf at New Era Field, Gerald Hodges had the chance to talk to the media.
Basically know the defense, you know, and it's not to know one particular position or anything like that. It's just to know what the positions and what the defense is surrounded by, you know, how everything ties in together. You know, we're all asked to go in there and make sure that we know the entire defense, basically.
Inside in 3-4 last year, right?
Yes, sir.
So maybe just talk about this adjustment and the level of your experience in 4-3 schemes.
I feel like I have a good experience in all types of defenses. I played in the different defenses, different D coordinators and things like that. So the way things are tying together, it's all coming in a positive matter. You know, like I said, I played in different defenses and things like that. So 3-4, 4-3, it's all schematically the same when you tie in certain defenses and things like that, and certain coverages.
And then just with respect to coverage.
Yes, sir.
Level of comfort there. I believe you did some of that in college, right? You did like a good deal of... a fair amount?
Yes, sir. At each position, no matter your middle linebacker, outside linebacker, and in this game, with the offense, the way they're set up, we're all asked to cover, you know. And so I feel like, you know, I don't want to try to have a strong suit in one point. I just want to make sure I have an all-around game, and I want to make sure I'm helping each guy, you know, have an all-around game. You know?
How tough is that, though, when you're a new guy in a new place, in a new scheme, and they're asking you to learn a lot of different roles? Would you prefer to almost be given a singular role to kind of fill? I know it makes you more valuable if you can do more things.
It's not that hard when you have guys who are welcoming, coaches who are welcoming. I mean, a facility who has nothing but welcoming people. You know, makes everything easier, makes the transition easier, you know, and it gives you a humble feel, you know, going into day in and day out and what the coaches are asking you to do. And that makes, like I said, that makes it better when you have a team and teammates and fellow, you know, linebackers who's willing to help you out and go along the way. So
I know you said the guys are welcoming, but
yes, sir.
You're competing with these guys,
yes,
too,
sir.
For playing time.
Yes, sir.
Well, what's that linebacker room like?
It's positive. You know, if I had to, one word for it, I had to say positive. And that's the most important thing you're looking to when you come onto a team is just the positive energy. And it's not, I mean, at the end of the day, we're all competing. We're competing against the offense, but mainly you're competing against yourself, you know. So when we come out here, we're willing to help each other, you know, to be the best we can be. Because as long as I'm helping someone and someone's helping me, we're being better as a team. So
you took your time to sign. You know, you had some options. Why'd you choose Buffalo ultimately?
This is where place I felt as though best fit, you know. What I was looking for, the welcoming from the coaches and, like I said, the welcoming from the staff. You know, I just felt comfortable here.
I know, you know, you're coming off a career year for yourself, numbers across the board. So, got to imagine you want to just build on that here this year. Maybe just speak to the challenge, because obviously if you return somewhere, it's easier to kind of get back in that starting lineup, because in most cases, I know there was a change in San Francisco, but in most cases, you know, the coaches know what you're capable of. This is a brand new environment for you, and I imagine you want to get back to that to build off of the success you had last
year. Most definitely, you always want to build in a positive way, you know, and I feel like as long as I come out here and I attack football the way I've been attacking football, you know, on and off the field, I feel as though things will play out how they play out. And like I said, I'm not worried about numbers or anything like that. I feel as though as long as I'm coming out here and competing with myself, competing with others, and competing against the offense, I feel as though as a team we all be able to prosper and we all fill out in a positive.
And then what about playing off of fellow linebackers? You know,
yes,
there's got to be that communication there at the second level. You're playing a little nickel too.
Yes, sir.
Just talk about how you get through that transition of getting used to new guys around.
Like I said, first getting here, like I said, everyone's been positive. You know what I'm saying? So when you come in here and people are positive, it makes the transition so much easier, you know, and coaches are positive. So you kind of energetic and you're happy to get into the building and learn more day in and day out, you know what I'm saying? And like I said, as long as it stays positive and things like that, it makes the transition so much easier.
Will you be playing on special teams too, Gerald?
Yes, sir. I'll be doing anything the coach asked me to do. Yep.
Gerald Hodges, linebacker, just signed about a month or so ago. We haven't had a chance to talk to him, but it's good to hear from him and good to see him get through the first couple of days of mini camps. And I don't have a better sense of where he's going to play yet. And we talked about that with Chris Brown going, you know, at the top of the show. With the need at Will linebacker, I would think he's the guy there. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I you know, he talked about getting reps, and you know, Chris Brown, to his credit, kind of grilling him about, are you comfortable dropping back into coverage? Of course, he said yes, he is. But that's really the need the Bills have, and it seems like maybe he's not spent most of his career at Will linebacker, but this team needs him there if he can get by at all out there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, to this point, Ramon has been playing that spot. And if anything, they really just want to create competition. Look, we bring in another veteran and create that competition. Ultimately, in the long run, you want one of those younger guys to step up and be the guy. But in the interim, you need one of these veterans to really emerge as the guy right now. And I think you're going to see a guy like Gerald Hodges move around a lot, just like you'll see Preston and Reggie move around a lot, you know. And we're going to see that in camp, you know, and it's hard to really tell right now because there are no pads on it or anything. But I would think he would be a guy who you will see play the weak side linebacker in camp. They're going to try him in that position and see what he can do. But he's so late to everything right now, still trying to learn the playbook and everything.
I want answers now.
You're like one of these millennials out here.
I want instant gratification. Who's the Will linebacker? Who's the number two receiver? I want to know now. No, I know. We've got a ways to go. I get that. Our Twitter poll today deals with the big playmakers on offense, not who will have the most plays or the most yards, but who's going to make the big plays. Sage Rosenfeld set us up with that when he joined us in the first half hour of the show and talked about how key it was for Sammy Watkins to make big plays in this new offense. If you missed that interview, it'll be up on our website shortly. Sage Rosenfeld's talked a lot about how this offense could be tailor-made for some of these playmakers, but that's our Twitter poll. Who do you think will come up with the big plays in the Buffalo offense in 2017. Two-thirds of you, 66% say Shady, 16% say the quarterback Tyrod, 14% say Sammy Watkins, 4% say somebody else. We got about 30 minutes left in the Twitter poll, and of course, we'll take your phone calls on that topic at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Nobody said Andre Holmes, who has had a good spring. Now, you know, spring doesn't mean anything. But he's had a good spring on special teams and particularly on offense, I think, Donald. Mm-hmm. And he could be a contributor. I don't know if he's going to make big big splash plays for the offense, but I think Holmes could be a contributor here this year.
I think he can be a big contributor in this offense. Out in the field, I think he can get up the field. He has enough speed to get up the field. He's so smooth in and out of his breaks. That's good for him, but I definitely think in the red zone he's going to be used, you know, and I think that because of his height, was he 6'4"?
6'4".
Yeah, 6'4", lanky. He can jump, you know, and you're going to throw the ball up to him. You can throw it to him on that back line. You need those tall – you want to have those taller receivers and tight ends working that back line once you get in the red zone. And I think he'll be a weapon once you get down there.
We'll see. Let us know what you think. Who will make the big plays on the Buffalo offense this year? 803-0550, the number, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Or by Twitter, you can reach out to us on Twitter. You can vote on our Twitter poll. Speaking of Twitter, as Donald mentioned when we were talking to Andre Holmes about special teams, Lorenzo Alexander tweets out, great job, John Murphy Show, calling Donald Jones out about his negative attitude on special teams. Sorry about that.
I like this
tweet. Can I read this tweet? This is going to set you off. Bernard Green, I remember being so mad at Donald Jones on special teams. He always told Spiller not to bring it out 1 yard deep. Stay in, bro. Is that true, Donald?
First of all, I would never tell him not to bring it out 1 yard deep unless the coaching staff told me to tell him not to bring it out.
I'm not – you sound like you're being accused of something here.
I get accused of a lot of things on this show. Just tweet me. How come I didn't get that tweet?
It went
matter of fact,
show.
Call up to the show.
Oh.
And let's talk about it, you know. People want to tweet.
Very
sensitive. Sit behind
about
your phones
very
and send
sensitive.
Things in. I never told C.J. Spiller at 1 yard deep not to bring – that doesn't even make sense. Why would I do that?
That doesn't sound like you.
Right. I mean, if 1 yard deep, if he was 3, 4, 5 yards deep, yeah, don't bring it out because I'm going to get in trouble for not stopping you.
Very sensitive about his special teams work, Donald Jones. Man. Hey, fake news, real news. You brought up a point about Derek Carr. Basically, your question was how good can he be that you were
basically,
asking, Andre?
Yeah,
because a lot of people are talking about Derek Carr making a lot of money, $25 million a year perhaps. We'll talk about that in Fake News, Real News. Could Derek Carr make that much money? That's coming up next. Fake News, Real News. It's coming up when we return on the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back with more John Murphy, Donald Jones. Tomorrow on the show, if you're looking ahead to tomorrow, and I do. We do. J.P. Lossman's going to join us, former Bills quarterback, former Bills first-round draft pick, now assisting coaching quarterbacks at Clemson. J.P. Lossman's going to be on the show this tomorrow at 1 o'clock. I'm interested in that.
Nah, I've never talked to him.
Never met him? Never talked to him? Good guy. Very young when he was here. and very, I might even say it tomorrow to him, a little bit immature, I think. And I'm curious and interested to talk to him tomorrow and just see where he's at. I thought he was a good guy with a good heart, had his heart in the right place.
J.P. Lossman.
Yeah.
You think, you never know who will make a good coach or not, but.
I would not have guessed him. That's another interesting thing to talk about with him tomorrow.
To be a coach?
Yeah.
Why is that? Because of his personality?
Yeah, he was young when he was here. He was a kid, okay, you know, and. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see that in him, but yeah, I like to be surprised by. No, I do. I like to see people develop and grow and emerge. And I hope he's a good coach. I know he's a good guy, and his heart's in the right place. I know that. I'm looking forward to talking to him.
Well, it's a good place to learn.
Yeah,
and they should win at the same time.
I like to be surprised by people. I do. I don't walk around thinking I got this all figured out. You know. What?
I hope not.
I don't. I'm open-minded. The phone line's open if you care to join us, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Or via Twitter, our Twitter poll is up. Who's going to get the big plays in the Buffalo offense? Most of you think it'll be Shady. We put up a couple of options there, McCoy or Sammy Watkins or Tyrod Taylor or somebody else. 803-0550, the number to call with your comments on that.
Bernard Green, he said, but you know you ain't want to block anybody. I'm going to call in.
That call goes right to the front of the line. Somebody's
right,
going to
exactly.
engage Donald.
Is he up on our list?
No, he's not.
All right.
Somebody wants to engage Donald on his lack of
somebody said fighting words.
Interest in special teams. Fake news, real news. We do it every day because there's so much fake news out there. It is sponsored by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Fake or real? We're talking with Andre Holmes a moment ago, the Bills wide receiver, played with the Raiders for a couple of years, played with Derek Carr. Derek Carr, who's coming off now, the pretty serious injury, he has said that if his contract is not worked out by the start of training camp in July, then he won't talk about it during the course of the season. The expectation is that Carr and the Raiders will have to come to terms, and the expectation is they will do it for record-setting money. Mm-hmm. Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, said Friday that if and when the Raiders lock up Derek Carr, he could become the first quarterback to earn $25 million a year. Andrew Luck makes $24.6 million average. Derek Carr will be the first $25 million quarterback in the NFL. Fake, real? I say real, and I say he's probably worth every penny based on the way he has played the first couple of years. I say right. Yes, he will be the first $25 million quarterback.
And see, here's my thing with, I mean, all players in this league, but especially quarterbacks. I think you need to play at a high level for multiple years before you get big contracts. Now, I understand it's what have you done for me lately, but when you see guys have one good year and then they break the bank, it's like, wait, what just happened? You know, and so Derek Carr is a guy who has, no matter, I mean, last year was really the first year that team was good, but he was good before then. He just didn't have all of the pieces around him, and yeah. I think that he's shown that he can really take that team to the next level, even though he got hurt. And so now, yeah, he deserves to be paid $25 million, and I think he will be paid $25 million, so I'm going to go real on this one as well.
Kirk Cousins could hit that mark first if the Washington gets him signed to a contract, gets him off the tag and onto a contract. I don't know if that's going to happen. But I think Derek Carr is the real deal, speaking of fake and real. And I think that, yeah, $25 million, and I think it'll be worth it for him, for the Raiders to sign him up, especially for a Raiders team that's making a move in a couple of years and will need to generate interest in Las Vegas. Who would you rather have than a big-name, highly paid quarterback?
The biggest thing is they have to pay Khalil Mack as well.
Yeah.
And so they're going to have to figure that out because both of those guys are going to get some of the biggest contracts in NFL history. So, you know.
If you're starting a team, an expansion team, and you get to pick one quarterback to start with this year, Derek Carr, Andrew Luck, who do you go with?
Derek Carr.
Me too. I don't even think about it.
Now, there's somebody in our other room out there.
This is trolling because you and I don't have the same regard for Andrew Luck that many do. But, all right, speaking of contracts, this is fake news, real news, part two. Holdouts. You know, back in the day, Donald, I'm going to put on my old guy hat. holdouts were big news, and guys would hold out a training camp, and it'd be acrimonious. Our guest earlier today, Bill Polian, was famous for blistering agents and players who would hold out in training camp. He called agents charlatans. His face would get all red, and Bill would have the veins bulging in his neck, and he's a charlatan. This is unacceptable. Those days are gone. In fact, some people think that the day of the holdout in the NFL is dead, and they point to Odell Beckham Jr., who is holding out from the spring practices for the New York Giants. I don't know if that's a real holdout. So fake news, real news. Holdouts will no longer be a thing in the NFL. I think that's real. I think a lot of it, with the rookies at least, a lot of it deals with the new CBA and the rookie wage scale. But even the veterans, when they hold out, it's not a big deal anymore. I think holdouts are really – I think they will no longer be a deal in the NFL. I think that's real. What do you think?
I think guys are still going to hold out. I think it just depends on the person and how strongly. So I'm going to go holdouts will no longer – I'm going to go fake on this one. I think it really just depends on that person and their agent and how strong they feel they need a new contract. Like we just saw it, 2 years ago with Cam Chancellor.
Yeah.
You know.
He held out, missed a couple of games.
And then he came back.
Came back but never really made up the money. I mean, there's no incentive based on Cam Chancellor to do it.
No, but, you know, guys are like, look, I want to get paid. I'm holding out. I think guys are still going to hold out. You know, guys that really feel strongly about it, they are going to hold out. And to be honest with you, certain guys in this league deserve to be – Odell Beckham deserves to be paid because he is not just a good receiver. He is just like Victor Cruz and a guy who comes in and changes the culture of that team. You know, regardless of all of the things he's done off the field, he's helped change the culture of that team. And the fan base, you know, they love to come and see him play. And so when you have a guy like that, he deserves to make his money. Pay that man.
There's a rookie holdout recently. Last year, Joey Bosa held out about a month at the start of training camp. But that didn't seem to amount to much. You know, he came in, got the money he would probably get. I know there were some intricate contract details that they were holding out over. He had 10.5 sacks in 12 games last year. Joey Bosa didn't even play until the first four games because of his holdout.
That we won't see. You know, we
rookie
won't.
Holdouts.
Yeah, rookie holdouts.
That was weird last
year. That was weird. I'm like, wait, he's holding out because it's not like the old days. Like now, you are slotted. This is what you'll make, and guys understand that, and that's what it is.
All right, and this goes along with holdouts too, fake and real. This is our last one. Mike Tomlin, who says he doesn't care. He's not worried about Le'Veon Bell being absent at minicamp. Bell has not signed his franchise tag, not under contract, so he really can't be there. And Mike Tomlin says no big deal. So is Mike Tomlin fake or real? He's just indifferent to Le'Veon Bell's absence from the Steelers minicamp. I think I don't think he's upset. I think that's fake. If he is, Tomlin's hiding it pretty well. And we're talking about a talented running back who probably doesn't need the spring practice time. So, no, I don't think Tomlin's upset with Le'Veon Bell not being there. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to go fake on this one as well. Mike Tomlin is a guy who is known as a player's coach, you know, and he played – he's played football. He understands what these players go through. And ultimately, he knows it's a business. He's going to, you know, say certain things in the media to try to get a guy's attention. But ultimately, these coaches understand, you know, guys want their money, you know. And there's nothing a coach can do if a guy wants to hold out and get paid, you know. And so he knows that Le'Veon Bell will be there for training camp and at least for the season. But he's just trying to make a statement to try to get his attention right
now.
Yeah, so
nothing to be upset about this time of year in June. Fake and real. Fake news, real news brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Got a call on the line from Bernard in Buffalo. Go ahead, Bernard.
Uh-oh.
Hello. Hey, John.
How are you?
I'm good. Big fan. What's up, Donald?
Go ahead, Bernard. You're on the air.
Oh, I just wanted to mess with Donald, man. I remember watching special teams and – they're kicking to CJ, and Donald puts two hands up like, don't do it, don't do it.
This is Bernard who claims, Donald, that you would wave CJ off. You tell him, don't come out, don't bring it out of the end zone. Defend yourself, Donald,
maybe
in 30
was,
seconds or
maybe
less.
Maybe I was hating on CJ. Like, no, man, you keep kicking it to CJ. CJ, sit down. No, man, it's CJ. There were certain times where they truly did not want us to bring it out. You know, now CJ might want to bring it out himself, but there were times that they truly say, look, don't bring it out. There are other times where it might seem like he's 1 yard deep, but he's too deep. And it's not just about how deep you are in the end zone. It's also height that comes into play as well. If the ball is kicked very high, And I can see that the kicking team is right there down at the 20, 15 by the time he catches the ball. It doesn't make sense for him to bring it out. It's just, I mean, that's, so there are things to you, Bernard, that, you know, you might not be able to notice. And there's things that I know that the coaching staff are telling me. And there are reasons why everything happens the way it does.
Thanks, Bernard. And Donald, we're glad you had a chance to defend yourself. Back with more in a moment with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security, home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned? Well, Sage Rosenfels joined us from a 12-year veteran NFL quarterback who now writes for thescore.com. He talked about the Bills, and he talked about how the Bills have to get better passing the ball. He says if they can get their passing game up to snuff, it looks like a playoff team. Sage Rosenfels about the improvements the Bills need to make in their passing game.
Their passing game, obviously, does not have those big plays. It's one of the worst in the league. So, you know, how do they change that up? And I think they hired the right guy, Rick Dennison, who comes for that Kyle Shanahan, Gary Kubiak, Mike Shanahan tree, who are great at running the football with their zone running scheme, the different running schemes, but also the play action. And I think that's somewhere where that Buffalo was missing last year, that Rick Dennison could come in and really make a big difference and could help out Tyrod Taylor and this offense become a legitimate passing threat in the NFL.
Sage Rosenfels on improvement in the Buffalo passing game. We had Bill Polian, the Hall of Famer, on the line with us in the 1 o'clock hour, the former Bills GM. He has been talking a little bit lately about the Jets and the reports and the speculation that the Jets are willing to lose on purpose this season in order to improve their draft stock. We asked Bill Polian if it is possible, even possible, to tank in the NFL.
I think it's close to possible. It seems clear to me that that's what Cleveland did last year. The Jets are a different story, and I made that clear. I believe it was on the Mike and Mike show that to which you're referring. I can't argue from a football standpoint that any of the veteran players that the Jets released were playing anywhere near to the level that they were being compensated. Mm-hmm. These were all guys who had not had either were injured or whose careers had taken a pretty precipitous downturn.
Bill Polian on the Jets situation. We talked, I think, last week, Donald, about the Jets. I think once they cut David Harris and got ready to release Eric Decker last week, I think we assumed they were in full tank mode. But as usual, Bill Polian makes a thoughtful point about where those players were. Now, I would argue that David Harris was a pretty effective player, but based on his salary, maybe the Jets had to look and say, you know, this doesn't match up anymore. Same for Eric Decker, who has had a spate of injuries. Decker, by the way, visiting the Tennessee Titans today. Brandon Marshall, who else has been let go down there? Mangold, did he go in this offseason?
He's gone.
I don't know. I mean, he makes it as usual. Like I said, when you talk to Bill Polian and listen to Bill Polian, I find over the years that he's pretty thoughtful about stuff. He thinks about stuff in a deep way, and I think he makes a decent point about the Jets there.
They let Revis go.
Revis, yep. Money certainly didn't match up there.
Ultimately, you have a lot of guys who were on the backsides of the career. The level of production is not the same as it used to be. So you have a guy the receiver, Eric Decker, who went through, you know, he had 10-plus touchdowns the year before last. Last year he had that injury. The one thing we don't know is if they approached any of these guys and said, take a pay cut, you know, and if they approached those guys first and said, take a pay cut, and then those guys said, no, I'm not taking a pay cut, well, then we have to release you. That's one thing. But, you know, it's a totally different thing when you're just like, we're going to cut everybody, especially a guy like David Harris, who at his age – It wasn't like this guy was missing a lot of games. Like, he was still in almost on all of their plays, playing a lot for that team since he's gone on to that team, you know. So I just don't get it. And then I think there's another thing to it when you let guys go now instead of letting guys go in March and allow them to, you know, that's just – that's bad. Like it's bad for players. Yeah, it's bad for players, yeah. And it's bad for free agents that might be coming there in the future.
Right.
When they can see, wait, you let these dudes go in June, where they had no opportunity. Now they're going to have opportunities to go somewhere else, but now they don't have big. They don't have a bunch of teams that are going to be calling for them because it's June, you know, and it's just bad for any free agents, future free agents that might come to that team.
Our Twitter poll today dealt with the Bills, and it was sparked by Sage Rosenfels' post, which is up at thescore.com. And you can hear the Sage Rosenfels' interview on our website as the afternoon moves along. Wanted to know where the big plays are going to come from the Buffalo Bills this year. We had a lot of response to this. 66%, two-thirds of you say LeSean McCoy will make the big plays in the Buffalo offense this year. 16% say Tyrod Taylor. 14% said Sammy Watkins. 4% said somebody else. Obviously, most people think LeSean McCoy. And I think, as much as I think the Bills need to improve on defense to get where they need to be, a better passing game would make a world of difference too, Donald. And that's why I would vote for Sammy Watkins.
Yeah, I think I'm still going to stick with the quarterback just because you want that quarterback to make plays for you, you know. And I think this year, as long as he has his guys on the field in this offense that we know or we has been said to suit him a lot better, he's going to have more opportunities to make plays, and I think he'll do that.
All right. We're back tomorrow. J.P. Lossman joins us tomorrow at 1. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Brayton Wilson, our board op today. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Honiter, Ryan Dukarm, Jess Pappas. Our producer, Jay Harris. We'll see you at noon tomorrow with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.